I need my morning animation injection or something. Everyone, we will wait for just a moment for County Council, and then we will start today's hearing. Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the February 23rd, 2012 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Actually, this is a continuation of a hearing on February 9th where there was only one item on the agenda, and that was continued off agenda so that y'all can plan your day accordingly. We did, on item 3, I believe it is, the Octagon Barn, receive a request for continuance on that particular item. So that would perhaps accelerate to the morning. However, I think there are some concerns about doing that because folks may have planned that the Acceleron application would begin to be considered at 1:30 after the lunch break. So I wonder if planning staff would like to comment on perhaps taking an extended recess after all the other items are continued and start Acceleron no earlier than 1:30 this afternoon.
That would be at the discretion of your commission. If you wish to do that, you could break whenever it is you finish your, I believe it's items 1 through 4, with two of those, one recommended for continuance off calendar and the other recommended for continuance to a date certain.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Orton again from County Council. I just would add that all items are advertised for 9 o'clock, so... there's no legal problem with continuing it earlier.
Thank you for that, but I just want to confirm with you that there's no legal problem either with taking an extended recess. Is that?
No, you could do that, although if you were to start earlier, it'd probably spill into the afternoon. There'd be plenty of opportunity for public comment.
Right. Commissioner Irving, you would like to comment on that?
Well, it would just be my suggestion that we start as soon as we can and then... If you've gotten to a certain point and more people show up after the lunch break, then reopen public comment would be my thought.
Mr. Chairman, there is a little bit of an issue with that in that if folks show up and they haven't heard either the staff presentation or the applicant presentation, oftentimes that helps to focus their public comment. So it is kind of nice to get everything heard at once.
Yeah, that was my feeling, Commissioner Irving, and if I do have no objections from other commissioners, then we will modify the agenda so that Acceleron the hearing would not begin before 1:30 this afternoon. So if anyone is here for Acceleron at this time and wants to leave until then, we'll take just a moment for disruption for folks to leave. If not, then we'll continue the hearing on the other agenda items. Okay. At this time, I would like to open our meeting today for public comment, and this is for items that are not on today's agenda. I have two speaker slips, but they're for Acceleron. I don't have any speaker slips for items not on today's agenda. I guess I don't see anyone approaching the podium, so I will close public comment and ask Ms. Griffin for any planning staff updates.
No real planning staff updates, except to let you know that your calendar into the future is looking good. It's not overbooked. You don't have a number of large projects, with the exception of the Acceleron project that you start your hearings on today. I wanted to also let you know that the appeal on the medical marijuana dispensary that your planning commission took action on, might have been last year, is scheduled to go before the board on the 6th of March, and the rural recreation issue is scheduled to go before the board on the 13th of March. That would be 7 plus 6. It's early in the morning. I can't add this early
okay.
in the morning. So I just wanted to let you know that those were coming up in case you wanted to listen in.
What was the second?
The rural recreation interpretation.
Zipline.
Oh,
Tim's
yeah.
Giant swings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't recognize what item you were.
It may be. I would have to check with the project managers. We do have some items scheduled for the 22nd too. It may be that we could move the item from the 29th up to the 22nd.
Okay.
So let me talk with the project manager, and we'll see if we can't get the items off the 29th.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Yes, Commissioner
Murphy.
Yeah, just
looking forward on the calendar. I may not be available May 31st if we're looking at a fifth Friday or fifth Thursday meeting in May.
Okay.
Just keep that in mind. I probably won't be able to make that meeting.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. I will need to pull consent agenda item B because I was absent for that particular Planning Commission meeting on August 4th, 2011 and would not be able to vote on it. So I would ask for a motion on consent agenda items A and C.
So I move we pass the consent agenda items A and C.
Thank
Second.
You. Second. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes. And now to consent agenda item B, the August 4th Planning Commission minutes. May I have a motion to approve those?
I so move.
Second.
Thank you very much. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Abstain. Okay. Ramona, would you please introduce item one?
Continued hearing to consider an appeal by Todd Piggott of a planning director determination, county file number DTM 2002011-00001, supervisorial district 1, county planning staff Matt Jansen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt Jansen, planning and building staff. This item has appeared on your agenda a couple times now, and I thought I owed you an explanation of what's going on with this item.
Okay.
Without going into the details of the item, because that wouldn't be fair to the landowner or the appellant. There was a delay in this. This is a director's interpretation appeal regarding a hot tub in Cayucas, and there was a delay because we needed a geological study to confirm where the bluff edge was. And we were asking for that over the holiday period, and it took us probably 2 months to get that report, which would normally only take about a month. And so now that we have that information, we're preparing a plan to mitigate, if you will, some of the development that has occurred on the bluff edge. continuing it off calendar takes care of two things. It doesn't make it show up again and not have a hearing. But it also gets the applicant's attention a little bit faster because now it requires re-noticing to the neighbors, and the neighbors are very watchful of this particular landowner. So that's why it's being continued off calendar. It's still a code enforcement case, and I'm working closely with the code enforcement officer to resolve it. Coastal Commission staff has been involved, and you may never hear about it again. I hope that's the case. But if it does ever come back, it'll be a pretty involved discussion.
I see.
So it'll be one or the other.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You bet.
For that update. Do any commissioners have questions for Mr. Jansen?
District 2, right?
District 2.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So no commission discussion, then I would entertain a motion to approve the continuation off calendar.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, Ramona, is there any discussion? I guess not from before. So, Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. At this time, let's see, we would be scheduled to hear item number 2. However, I understand item 3 is there's a request for a continuation. Would it be possible, Mr. Orton, to reverse the order of these?
That's up to the discretion of the commission.
Yes. Okay. Is staff ready to, or would staff prefer that we just go on to item 2?
These are well thought and well vetted, so we're asking for a continuance. And the applicant has agreed to the continuance as well.
Okay. Mr. Orton, would it be appropriate to open for public comment even though this item is being continued?
Yes, I think it would be if there's somebody who can't come back at that time.
Okay. In that event, I would open at this time for public comment. I do not have any speaker slips on this item. Seeing no one coming forward, I will close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Any comments from commissioners on this item? Any discussion? Doesn't look like it. So, Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, I sent a memo to Planner Pedrotti with some questions and issues on it. So, since we're not holding a hearing today, I would like to get responses to those prior to our next meeting, if we could, if those could be addressed.
We can include those in the staff report that'll be prepared for the continuance.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd just like to mention that I visited the site the other day at the request of B.K. Richard and of the Slough Conservancy, appreciate if staff would look into the ADA requirements, because it's got a dirt floor and uneven, plus uneven concrete.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead as District 3, it's a District 3 project, and make a motion that we continue this item to May 10th, 2012.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Okay. So now we are, which item is this? this is item 2. Okay. Ramona, would you please introduce item 2?
Hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend section 21.02.090 of the Real Property Division Ordinance. County file number LRP 2010-0008, supervisorial, that is, correction, -00008, supervisorial district, all, Nick Forrester, program manager.
Good morning, Mr. Forrester.
Good morning, Commissioner O'Grady and other members of the commission. I am Nick Forrester with the County Planning Department. Before we get started, there is a little bit of housekeeping we need to do.
Okay.
There were a few last-minute ordinance revisions prepared, last-minute ordinance provisions prepared, and I need to hand out copies of those to you, and we'll discuss those during the hearing. This is an application by the County Planning Department to revise Title 21, the county's real property division ordinance. The proposal is to modify the ordinance so that the planning director would have discretion to elevate certain items that would otherwise be heard by the Subdivision Review Board to your body, the Planning Commission. The type of projects that under this language could be elevated to your commission would be those projects that involve substantial public controversy or involve significant land use policy issues. Why are we doing this? This was a recommendation of the grand jury. In 2010, the grand jury looked at the planning process and made a recommendation for improvement. This was the recommendation they made. The proposed language is identical to language that currently exists in Titles 22 and 23 in regards to minor use permits and planning department hearings. And we've added language to this ordinance amendment at the last minute to also affect time extensions in Title 21. There's been several changes in state law which have added additional time extensions to maps. Current county ordinance does not reflect those, even though they're already in effect as the action of state law. So we're attempting to change Title 21 so that when the public is reading Title 21, they'll be aware that these options are available to them. And our recommendation is to...
And the staff was that we also make that change here so that somebody's reading the ordinance, they're not confused.
So for consistency.
Right. As far as the law is concerned, we've been applying the 6 years ever since it went into effect.
Okay.
But I just wanted to reflect it in the ordinance. So that's why I suggested that change be added.
Okay. Mr. Irvin, yes, please.
Mr. Orton, a question about that 6 year period. Was that a permanent change to the MAP Act on the state, or was that temporary based on the economy?
No, that was a permanent change. I think it was in 2008. The state added one year automatic time extension, and then they changed the 5 to the 6 for both parcel maps and tracts maps. And then in 2009, there was an automatic 2 year extension that was added, and then last year there was another 2 year extension. So the all we're doing is reflecting the ability to ask for one additional discretionary time extension. It's the other ones that are the automatic ones that just go for a certain period of time. So the legislation that went through touched two issues.
Okay.
Automatic time extension for 1 year and increase from 5 to 6 the ability to have another discretionary year.
Okay. I think I'm clear. Thank you.
Maybe I gave you too much information.
Any other commissioner questions? Okay, I'd like to open it up to public comment at this time. I don't have any speaker slips on this particular item. Seeing no one approaching the podium, I will close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Any further discussion or questions by commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to add one additional thing.
Oh.
This item has a long-range planning number, but because it's an amendment to the real property division ordinance, it's not part of the county's general plan. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record, too. It doesn't have to only have the 4 times a year and be tied up with the general plan amendments, although I think that's the way staff has normally brought forth these requirements. But I just wanted to make clear that it's not part of the general plan and it's not part of the certified local coastal program.
Okay. Okay, I would ask for a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Second.
I think we might need to elaborate
a little more on
motion.
That.
Well then,
I should have been more specific, Commissioner Irving. I'm sorry. I led you down the garden path.
Move that we approve the request by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend Section 21.02.090 of the Real Property Division Ordinance.
Would Commissioner Orton or Mr. Attorney Orton, would we need to reference Exhibit B in this motion?
I think you should also mention the other section, 2106010, and you could reference Exhibit B also as revised.
Are you clear about 26010? I'm not.
26010 is the 2106010 is a section dealing with discretionary time extensions, and that's what I added in Section 2.
There you go. So I will amend my motion to include Section 21.06.010
and
Exhibit B, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think that should do. And then second, please.
Second.
Okay.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Okay, thank you, Mr. Forrester. Okay, Ramona, please introduce hearing item number 4.
Hearing to consider a request by Gianni Manucci for a conditional use permit, county file number DRC 2011-00006. Supervisorial District 1, Holly Phipps, Project Manager.
Okay, thank you. But before we get to the staff report, I'd like to ask commissioners if they have any ex parte to report.
And I do. I met with the applicant and a site visit earlier this week to see the project and the layout of the property. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other commissioners? Okay. Good morning, Ms. Phipps.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Orton.
Up to 90 guests. The proposed project is located on the south side of Adelaida Road, approximately 3 miles northwest of the city of Paso Robles. The proposed project is located in the agricultural land use category and is located in the Adelaida planning area. And then quickly, I'll just go through some slides. Aerial image, the tasting room is here. The B&B and the wine processing building is here. It's an older aerial, and so it doesn't show that there's another single-family residence located in this area. Site plan pretty much shows the same thing. Here we have the elevation. So this top elevation would show the 1,500-square-foot addition onto the wine processing building. And below we have the elevation showing in brown the addition to the tasting room. A floor plan, and this round section here is the addition along with the kitchen. And in the bottom here, we have a simulation of what that would look like. So this here would be facing Adelaide, would be out this way, and this would be off to the side. Staff would like to make a minor edit to the staff report on page 4-6 under environmental determination. A categorical exemption, the project qualifies for a categorical exemption. It's a class 3. And then the next, we'd like to change section 15303 parentheses C and delete the other notated section. Sorry about that.
So that's section 15301C, period?
Yes.
Okay.
With that, staff is recommending approval of this conditional use permit based on the changes read into the record and based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And staff, that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Phipps. Unless commissioners have any burning questions, I'd like to open up to public comment at this time. starting with the applicant, if the applicant is here to present. And just a reminder to please fill out a speaker slip when you're concluding, after you've concluded your presentation, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioner Grady and Commissioners. My name is Jeff Schneiderite, 580 Dolliver Street in Pismo Beach. I'm the architect on the project. The architecturally speaking, the major role of what I did on the project was to design the addition to the tasting room and the what would be a dining facility for the guests of the B&B itself. The intent was to kind of focus off the Kiva design with the Southwest Indian theme of the project in a whole as a gathering place for the guests. The office and upstairs kind of helps it keep spread out or keeps it from spreading out, keeping a smaller footprint and still addressing Southwest Indian designs like Taos and buildings like that.
Could you move just a bit closer to the microphone, please, just in front of it? That would be fine. Thank you.
Okay. There's also a need for additional wine storage and production, which is where the 1,500 square foot addition to the winery building comes in, as well as some wine storage in the addition itself. But given the shape of the Kievan proportions, it fits nicely into the space as proposed.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Gianni Minucci. I'm the owner and the proprietor of the Wild Coyote Winery. I want to thank you for having us on your agenda today. And just want to emphasize on the size of the project is, to us, is extremely small. We've been neighbor of this community for 17 years. Our project started small and continues to be small. In fact, from our construction 12 years ago when we started some of these facilities to today, to today's date, our expansion has been practically zero. So the only thing we're trying to do with this project is really provide a little space for our lodging facility to have an area where they can gather up and have their breakfast. And obviously, we need a little more space in our winery, which we're proposing the expansion on the winery. Just want to emphasize that both of these spaces where we're proposing the construction on the only, I guess, concerns or questions that we have regarding some of the conditional items on page 47, item 7, we have an issue with that because, again, the project is not to increase traffic. It's not to increase big trucks and any other large vehicles to access or exit our property. Therefore, the use of item number 7 for reconstructing our entryway, I feel that's really not necessary due to the way we operate our facility, and to the intent of the project, should have no effect on our entry gate. The entry gate has been constructed for 12 years. We've had literally zero incident of traffic problems or accidents of any nature. We do not have large trucks for transporting any kind of grapes for our vineyard because we're a 100% state winery. We're self-contained. We do not import or export fruit or any other large materials from our facility. So we would like you to reconsider item number 7 on the agenda there, and which sort of ties into item 8 as well. Item 8 on page 48, that's our secondary gate, which is primarily used by our field workers to access the property. And again, it's worked sufficiently for 12 years. without any incident. So item 7 and 8, we'd like you to reconsider. Item 9 on page 4-8, discusses the pavement structural integrity of the roadways. Again, we have zero interest or plan to do anything to the roadways because we're not increasing any traffic. We're not reconstructing. We're not doing any grading. We're not doing any kind of dirt movement to the roadways. So we feel that potentially should be eliminated. Item 10 on page 4-8 discusses the drainage calculation. Both of the spaces, as I mentioned earlier, they've already been in existence for 12 years, and they're draining properly because way back then we designed the site to handle any additional drainage. And as some of you have been to our site and seen our site, we've had zero erosion or drainage issues or problems or any kind of complaints from neighborhood. So they seem to be sufficient, so we're not sure if item 10 is also necessary. And item 11, which, again, it discusses the erosion and sediments. Again, our site is being bulletproof. It's worked for 12 years. We're not adding any additional buildings that's going to really create more drainage or erosion issues. We're not doing any road work or anything of that nature. So we feel that item 11 should also be reduced. Outside of that, those are the only concerns we have.
Okay, thank you. And just a reminder, if both of you would fill out speaker slips, it would be appreciated.
Sure.
So thank you very much. I don't see anyone else coming up for public comment. I have no other speaker slips for public comment. Seeing no one approaching the podium, I will close public comment at this time and bring it back to the commission for discussion, starting with Commissioner Irving and whose district this project is.
Thank you. I do have questions of Mr. Marshall and Public Works' letter regarding the issue, first of all, starting with what the applicant has brought up about the existing gate. As I look at it, it seemed like there was adequate site distance. When you move, if you were to require that gate to move uphill, it actually looks like it would create more problems because of the slope of the driveway. But in particular, why the requirement when this is an estate winery? Could this be modified to say if it ever changed and they started to import grapes, then you would want that? But please expound on your requirement.
I'd be happy to. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. In fact, all of Mr. Minucci's comments had to do with Public Works recommended conditions of approval. So I can go through all of them and
that would be good.
I'll start with number 7. This is a condition that we've been putting on projects for the last 2 years in conformance with the public improvement standard that comes from. In addition, the B1E driveway approach provides tapers coming in towards the driveway and exiting the driveway, typically 75 feet, and allows for vehicles to even pull off into a paved shoulder just as they slow down and make the turn. And on a high-speed road like this, it's advisable to keep that. Mr. Minucci also mentioned number 8, which is another driveway approach for his secondary access. That one, because it's not the primary access, we're not asking for the gate to be set back, and we're not asking for the B1E or high volume, high speed driveway. We're just asking for a standard driveway. And that's primarily two functions. One is to protect the existing edge of pavement from it being broken off, and secondly is to knock the dirt off the vehicles leaving the farm fields before they get onto the paved public road. As you can imagine, we have motorcycle riders and bicyclists that are subject to any sort of sediments on the road, make it somewhat slippery and somewhat dangerous.
If I could just jump in right then, Glenn, how large an apron are you? Is that described in the?
Usually, it's a variable width, anywhere from 20 to 35 feet at the applicant's choice, and it extends from the existing edge of pavement back to the right of way, and that's it. After that, beyond that, we always encourage they have some sort of gravel or something to knock the dirt off even more, but we don't require that because that's on private property. Moving on to number eight, evidence.
Nine.
I'm sorry. Number nine. That's a stock condition. Basically, it's just assuring that CAL FIRE is happy with both the primary and secondary access roads. As long as they get buy off on their fire safety plan, then they've met the condition.
But you don't, with seven and eight, you don't see anything additional being required by number nine at this time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Seven and eight have to do with the public right-of-way, the driveway approaches.
Right.
Number nine is the on-site roads. Just make sure that they meet the turning radiuses of everything that CAL FIRE needs, but it's already covered in their fire safety.
CAL FIRE did not comment in their comment letter about the driveway. So do we assume, or does the applicant assume from that the driveway as it is now meets their requirements? So did not comment?
I don't assume anything. I just put a stock in there prior to signing off on any of the building permits. CAL FIRE will go out there, and this is just a mechanism for them, as well as their fire safety plan, to ensure they have all weather access and they can.
So that was that condition of approval was your insertion, not anything from CAL FIRE?
That is correct. Okay. This is one that I typically, it's a stock condition we throw in.
Okay. And are you?
Whether I have the authority to do that or not is a whole different question.
Are you number 10, too?
I am also number 10 and 11. And both these have to do with building permits, and these are just standard right out of the ordinance, and it's more of a for your information. It's not a requirement of any sort, as if they do provide building permits, they will automatically come to us, and we will automatically be looking at drainage and looking at sedimentation and erosion control. So it's kind of a be forewarned that when you make your submittal for building permits, you should include these items.
And they may actually have the documentation that you would need since
certainly
they have done this grading previously.
Yeah.
So it would just be a matter of resurrecting that and presenting it to you as far as the permit is concerned.
That is absolutely right. If they have to provide a permit, if no permits are required, then nothing needs to be done. They've met the intent of these conditions.
Just to tag on to that, I would assume, given that they're going to be adding square footage and that construction permits would be required, in 12 years, there have been a number of changes to the laws relative to grading and drainage and erosion control. So we want to make sure that the current building codes and state laws are in effect and applied.
Okay. Thank you for adding that. Commissioner Irving, you can continue.
Yes, Ms. Marshall, referring to your letter, referral letter on 4-13, point number six, ongoing condition of approval, any gate constructed, refer being a minimum 75 feet back, you refer only to the off-site grapes being delivered or product being exported,
mm-hmm.
and not there is no reference to what you were just discussing about a bottling truck of that sort.
So the packet is my understanding that
you're saying it brings if they're not from the way I'm interpreting mm-hmm. this, if they're not bringing in grapes and they're not exporting trucks, then there's no need for the removal or rather the relocation of the gate.
Mm-hmm. I'm not completely familiar with their operations. Usually when you have a winery that has production capabilities, they are importing and exporting. Usually it's the semi-trucks.
Well, the other question I have is when I look at the site, where the gate is now, I can see your point about extending into the roadway if that was the case.
They could take the gate off. That would meet it. So they could take the gate off and put in a secondary gate back behind this one or a chain or something. There's other options that might be less difficult or onerous than just physically relocating the one they have. I don't necessarily see this one as being that big of a problem. It remains our recommendation.
I understand it remains your recommendation. I would not agree with it.
That's
okay. Do you have any other further questions?
No, that
comments,
was
Commissioner.
That was the extent. If the rest of the commission would like to weigh in,
which driveway is the gate on? I'm looking at the drawing here. I assume I can see where it's at, but I don't know if I'm 100% sure.
We can pull up a picture of that.
Is it the one that comes in towards what appears to be a reservoir?
Correct, yes.
Okay. We actually have a picture. Is this the gate we're talking about right here?
Yes.
Primary access.
Okay. Can I add one comment?
Okay.
As the gentleman just described about the winery philosophies of a lot of wineries importing, exporting grapes, that comment for the most part is correct, but that's really what sets us apart as far as our operation, and that's kind of a secret trade in the business is that our philosophy is that we're 100% state, meaning everything is self-contained and 100% on our facility. So it's not correct to generalize that all wineries purchase and import-export fruit from their facility. In fact, we've never done that from our beginning, and that's part of our trade philosophy that our customers appreciate is the fact that everything we grow on our site is 100% what we use. We do not import or export. So there are exceptions to wineries that do not practice the general philosophy about how wineries do their business.
Okay, well, thank you for that additional information. You can relax and be seated, and if we have any other questions of you, we would ask you to return to the podium at that time. Thank you. Commissioner?
On the number of events, you said they're reducing it down to 9. That's not in addition to their current permit. They're actually reducing it from 12 to 9?
Yes, that is correct. They were approved for a large amount, and they have found that this is what works for them and their site.
If I could jump in.
Guess it don't matter why.
On that issue, this is Whitney McDonald from the County Council's office. I had the same question, actually, about the events issue, and I think it might help if we clarified the condition a little bit, condition 1C, because when I looked at it, the mention of the continuation of the special event program to me made it look like they got to have 9 in addition to. So if we just take out that first sentence and just state a maximum of 9 special events per year with up to 90 guests, I think that might make it a little more clear.
Or would you suggest a reduction of the special instead of the word continuation? A reduction of the special event program? I think that
we need to make it.
I mean, this is, to me, this is a very positive thing that they're actually voluntarily reducing special events.
Right. If I could also just mention one other thing for your consideration regarding the gate access. Even though the applicant does not do any importing or exporting of grapes at this time, and they're a 100% estate operation, because the permit vests and runs with the land forever until something happens, basically, it would probably be a good idea to think of these types of contingencies. You know, it might not always be the case that they're 100% estate. So I just wanted to throw that out.
To that, and that was a point I was going to bring up, is could that condition that Public Works has be modified so that if the operation of the winery was to change, then the gate relocation would take place? Would that
Could you say conversely that this is a self-contained operation with no imports or exports?
But don't they actually export bottles? I mean, they have a capacity of 10,000 cases, so I assume they transport those off for sale. So it's not fully self-contained, whereas people come up here to buy their bottles. But I don't know their operations. I'm just...
Neither do I.
Ms. Phipps, could you clarify that? Because there's a question as to whether or not all wine produced is sold exclusively on the property or if any of it goes off the property for sale.
No, I'm sorry. I cannot clarify this.
Okay. Would the applicant please return to the podium and answer that question? Thank you, Mr. Minucci.
Even though our...
That's an alternative.
Forever being locked in here.
Well, or until they change, and then when they change, have to ask for reconsideration.
I think Ms. McDonald hit it on the nose. I mean, this is a land use permit that goes... They're entitled to these maximums. It would be difficult for us to enforce when they actually changed
right.
it. So okay, my recommendation is no. We leave the condition as it is. But
I would have one more question, maybe for Ms. Phipps. Do wineries report their actual production in some way to the county?
No, they do not. They are required to report to the Regional Water Quality Control Board if they increase their production above a certain amount. So right now they are at below 10,000 cases, and so they're grandfathered in, and there's no changes. So if they were to go above 10,000 cases, then they would be required.
Speaking more specifically to this instance, Mr. Mnuchin says they produce 3,000 cases, but you would have no way of knowing if all of a sudden they were producing 5,000 or 6,000 cases. Is that
not
correct?
Unless it came out in a magazine.
Yeah. Okay. No, but my point being, there is no reporting to the tax collector or anything of that sort. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Murphy?
And I was curious about the barrel storage in the dining area that came up in the Ag Commissioner's letter. Is this just freestanding barrel storage in somewhere in that area?
Yes, on the outer walls. The applicant was getting a little heavier in visitor use versus storage and processing at the beginning. And then about a day before the staff report was due, we added the 1,500 square foot addition processing building and barrel storage. So we were trying to keep this oriented toward processing and not so much that the primary use on site was visitor use. And so when it first came in, the architect was very creative in saying that this would look really cool to incorporate some additional storage here, which ended up to be 240 square feet. But at the time that the ag referral came in, they did not know about the additional 1,500 square foot addition onto the processing building.
So are these storage, is this freestanding rackage that they're going to store these wine barrels in? It's not a permanent structure?
I'll let the architect.
I mean, there is, because the concern was conversion into dining space from barrel storage and increasing beyond the allowed square footage for dining.
Yeah, because they're allowed, the dining area, they're allowed 800 right. square foot total, and so they really wanted this size to be 1,200, and so this was the way we could massage that.
Okay. So what type of storage rack are you talking
about? They are the racks that you can move around on forklifts and stuff, where you set the rack down, then barrels, then another rack, more barrels, and stack 3 to 4 high.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. For massaging, that kind of maybe raises some concerns here. But
was that your last question?
That's my last question I've got.
Okay. I have just a few. The reason a conditional use permit is being required, could you elaborate on that?
For a restaurant in non-commercial categories, the ordinance requires a conditional use permit. So a limited food service facility is allowed in agricultural land use category, and then it allows them to have the 800 square foot. The kitchen is 190 square feet. The indoor use area is 610. When they originally came in, the square footage was so large, and during the pre-app, we suggested that they could get an addition to the kitchen without triggering this, but what they were asking for was so large that we felt it no longer qualified for that use. So we decided to call it a restaurant, a non-commercial category, even though they're not going to really operate as such.
Okay. The business about the setback modification, they previously were granted a waiver on that, correct?
Yes.
So just for completeness, you are reiterating that there is a waiver and this setback remains what it was originally approved as? Is that, do I understand that correctly?
Originally, it was approved that the building could be as close as 50 feet from the rear property line.
Okay.
So it's never, perhaps never adequately measured. I don't know why it...
Okay. This approval does not authorize limited food service facility to serve food as a restaurant. It's only be used for, okay, A and B. Okay. Well, I think that clarifies it for me, although I still have the question why it's limited to breakfast and not lunch and dinner for the patrons. Maybe that's just the way the applicant, that's all he's...
Because,
yeah, it's,
yeah, B
that
and A,
okay,
duh.
Well, I've been to a few that would be, oh, you got even with me, didn't you, Commissioner Irby?
But you are correct. The applicant stated that he does not want to have any more work for himself, that he's just happy serving breakfast.
All right, well then, thank you for this revised language. And without Commissioner objection, we'll incorporate that into the record. Let's see if I had... Oh, yes, on page 4-8, condition 15B talks about obtaining a health permit to function as a commercial kitchen. And I guess I'm not understanding where you use language about non-commercial, and here we're talking about getting a permit to function as a commercial, and I don't understand the distinction there.
I talked with Leslie Terry from Environmental Health this morning because I myself got confused and didn't understand.
Okay.
So B&Bs require a different permit system. So under this, they do not require a commercial kitchen per the Environmental Health permit, so they do not require that. Special events would also not require them to have a commercial kitchen because that's for their private guest. Wine industry events for club members do not require a commercial kitchen. However, if you did have wine industry event where it was open to
the
all
public.
The public and you're serving food from that kitchen, then you would be required to have a commercial kitchen.
Okay.
But Mr. Minucci has stated that none of those apply to his particular project, and he has a caterer, and so that condition is not needed.
Oh, so you're going to be revising 15B?
We could omit B. When they submit their plans to Environmental Health, Leslie will look at that, and then they'll state what they're using the kitchens for, and then she will not require them to have a commercial kitchen permit.
Well, but I think we have to reword 15B that says the applicant shall obtain a...
appropriate health permits, period, and then delete the last sentence?
No. Delete the words as commercial kitchen, appropriate health permits. The applicant shall submit kitchen plans for review and approval by Environmental Health.
Thank you, Commissioner Irving. That sounds really good to me. So the applicant shall obtain appropriate health permits, period?
Period.
And then the rest of it stays.
Yeah.
Okay. The staff concur with
yes.
That change? Okay. Thank you. let me just quickly go through the letters, but I think that was it. Yes, those are all my questions. Does any other? Looks like I lost my screen here.
Tap it.
Yeah.
No, the screen.
Tap the screen. Tap the front of the screen. Wake up.
I know the plug was recalcitrant the last time this happened, so.
Well, we can yell.
There we go. Okay, there's no other commissioner on this.
I would like to have some discussion among the commission about the condition of approval 7 and see how everyone feels. My feeling is I would like to see that at least modified to should the conditions of the operation of the property change, that Public Works' requirement may come into play. But at this point, I certainly saw no need for that condition. But
Commissioner Topping,
up to the rest of the commission.
Your light's on.
Well, I guess the question is being able to monitor whether there's an intensification of use. That would seemed to be the basis for the concern from Public Works.
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. It's not, obviously, there's going to be a little bit more intensification because they're adding square footage, and trip generation is based on usually on square footage. In general, this is had this permit, this been permit come in maybe 2 years ago, you would have seen these exact same conditions as you will with any other permit in the general area. So the clarification maybe I need from your commission is it the gate or is it the approaches? The approaches are going to be more costly. That's 75 feet either direction. Okay, that's strictly for trucks. Now, I did hear from testimony today that actually, it's in the staff report that they do import the bottling truck. That truck is typically 65 feet long. So at least once a year, if not however often they bottle, you're going to get at least one truck. You may get more. Maybe events bring in larger trucks to do CESA. I just don't know. From a safety standpoint, though, if your commission is going that route, then I think you need to break it up between the tapers, the B1E, and the gate.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is a safety issue as far as the gate is concerned, and I draw that distinction between the gate and the taper, unless there are some safety issues with the taper that I don't understand. But mm-hmm. I'm not, and this is a well-established standard, so I'm certainly not comfortable with compromising on the gate from a safety standpoint.
Okay.
The other the taper, I'm not sure yet.
A little explanation. Could
sure.
you give a little further explanation on the taper that would that require them moving their existing fencing into, or is the taper that's there now just simply need to be paved out further? Is that what you're saying?
The taper that's there now would have to be paved out further, and it would be our recommendation the taper definitely go in. That's more critical
yes.
than the gate.
Oh, really?
Yes.
From a safety standpoint?
From a safety standpoint.
So you have the place to pull off.
I see.
Yeah, because there's a lot more chance of people are coming in and out all the time. The truck might be coming in once a year or never.
Okay.
You know, hardly.
Right. Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
The taper basically just paves the edge of the road to allow people to merge out of the road,
and
especially on a high-speed road.
So they could pull off then, with the taper, they can pull off even if the gate is up.
Correct.
And close.
Just a clarification. The applicant is asking for elimination of conditions 7 through 11, and you might want to see if we're going to modify conditions, whether we're talking about all five conditions being modified or just...
They were just boilerplate standard.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
That was
right. They'll follow on.
That was not my intention, but given what Mr. Marshall just said, I think I could support seeing 7 broken apart into a taper at this time, but the relocation of the gate at such time as use of the property changed. That way it would be incorporated in the long, the permit that runs with the land, correct? So I that's the way I'd like to see that broken apart and handled.
Sorry, Commissioner Murphy, you had your light on and I didn't notice it.
We can't control the future use of the property once we pass this permit and we'll have no idea what's going on in the property. And it's what we're permitting today. This is a winery. There can be trucks for construction purposes, for winery equipment. In the future, they may import grapes. I'm just concerned that the truck's backing up into a road that's apparently traveled at fairly higher speeds because it is a straightaway. So I think it's a rather critical safety issue. So I support the 75-foot and the aprons on 7. I'd like a little more discussion on 8 and what they're asking for in that driveway approach, what that amounts to, and how critical it is.
Certainly. 8 is mainly, it's only critical from the aspect is it protects the existing edge of pavement along Adelaida Road.
Yeah.
Because right now there is no driveway approach, so there's more of a chance as the vehicle tires jump onto the edge of pavement, it'll break across the edge of pavement. Could pose a safety issue, loosen rocks, which might pop up. But in general, it's to protect our edge of pavement and to hopefully knock some of the material off the wheels of the vehicles as they leave the property.
So what would the dimensions be of that apron roughly?
It varies. I think it's 20 feet minimum width with 5-foot returns as you conform with the edge of pavement. And it extends back to the right-of-way, which may be 5, 10 feet, to the fence line, basically.
Okay. So it's just a small asphalt.
Small asphalt.
A transition from the dirt onto the road.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's our most basic rural driveway apron.
So if you could sum it up from a safety perspective, what, if any, modification might work? To the current language of the condition.
I would recommend you leave it as is.
Ms. McDonald, you'd like to speak on this matter?
Thank you. I had two points I wanted to make. One on, and I think the issue's been raised already, but were we to separate out the gate from the aprons and tying the gate requirement to a change in use, it just becomes an issue of enforceability. What would happen is if we learned that there was a change in use, we would basically need to give notice that this has happened, it triggered this condition. We could get into an argument about whether or not there really was a change in use that would trigger that. And if they weren't going, if they disagreed and decided not to comply with our request, we would, that if we were going to be changing these requirements, it may be that what we're really talking about is a waiver or deferral of our land use ordinance and our, you know, Title 13 requirements. So when you get a permit, you know, it triggers a requirement that you bring your property or your project into compliance with the then existing laws. And so if we were to kind of backtrack from that, we may be talking about actually a waiver of our ordinance standards, and then we need to go through, have a discussion about whether or not a waiver is appropriate, and then possibly
perhaps we need to understand where the standard specifications reside, if they are part of an ordinance or they sit outside of an ordinance. My understanding was that they are not part of your ordinance, and only when we're dealing with subdivisions do we get into formal exceptions. And I might be incorrect about that because I know you recently did update them.
Did yes. They are adopted by the board, the public improvement standards. What I'm looking at is Title 22 with access to you have to have legal access. To have legal access, then you switch over to Title 13, which is encroachments, which is under the authority of the Public Works Director, and which ties into our public improvement standards. So I think it all is kind of interrelated to some.
If you drill down, you go from the standard, and it is actually tied to an ordinance.
An ordinance, yeah.
Okay, let's do a sense of the commission, starting with Commissioner Christensen.
I am fine with the conditions 8 through 11 as put in the staff report. I am a little concerned about the gate being moved in the sense that I understand it's related to an ordinance and I understand the reason for it. But I also understand the idea. Mr. Irving is the one who's been to the actual site, and I haven't. And I am concerned about where this gate would end up being. If you know, you're talking about safety for a truck that might be coming in at this point at least once a year, or not very often, or very rarely. And then you're talking about moving the gate to a position that might be unsafe in other ways. So I'm not really. I mean, there are two completely different kinds of safety. One of them has to do with ingress, and the other might have to do with how you drive trucks. But that's my only. That's where I'm at. Where I might be.
Allow the gate to remain where it is for now, and sort of fashion some sort of language.
Yeah.
to defer it. Yeah. Okay, Commissioner Irving.
I think you know my position, but because as I measured and looked at the site, the road starts sharply uphill when you come in 75 feet from the existing gate. And I can see both problems exiting as well, because now the truck is parked. If the gate is closed, the truck is parked on a fairly steep road.
So right, okay. So the gate provision you're prepared to modify.
But I would like to modify that. I'm good with conditions 8 through
okay, the rest,
11.
And are you good with what, the shoulder?
I can understand the apron. I think that's
okay,
absolute.
So it's pretty close to Commissioner Christensen's
yes.
position, it sounds like to me. Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, based on the picture, the gate they put up, it looks like it's a key card and probably has an automatic opener on exit. Is that? I don't think this gate, I don't even know if it can be manually opened. Is the existing gate, can you open it manually, or does it require a key card or activation of a metal detector?
Okay, could you return to the podium, please, Mr. Mannucci?
So I don't know that the truck will be stopping. That's my point.
So actually, the answer is both. There's a access keypad, so certain individuals going to have the access key to code in, as well as there's a box on the inside of the fence where they can switch or flip a switch to open the gate. So it's got both options.
Okay, so the switch is on the inside coming. So if you're exiting, you can flip the switch?
When you're exiting, there is a sensor. So the sensor, which is on a slope, mm-hmm. That's what Mr. Irving is talking about. The sensor picks up the opening of the gate to go out. But to come in, you either have to key punch it or use the flip switch on the side of the gate.
And are they accessible from the vehicle, or would you have to exit the vehicle to flip the switch or enter the code?
The code is accessible via your auto. You can just roll down the window. Mm-hmm. The switch, you have to get down and flip it. Okay. But again, the whole idea here is that we have Leary, zero outside truck.
at this time of condition 7, or a modification.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Topping. I agree with Commissioner Topping. I wish I could think of a way to defer the gate replacement, but it seems too problematic to me. Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, looking for if another applicant, even this applicant, we got the issue, now we're on the record, if there is an accident and somebody looks into that we approve the gate in this location, are we liable that we allow this if it doesn't comply with the current, if it's not an ordinance, whatever regulations we have regarding access gates. So it does create some liability, because I know that happens to the county when there's a road improvement that wasn't done according to Hoyle, they get sued and usually end up doing a settlement or whatever. So I'm going to lean towards safety on this one and go along with leaving it as is.
Well, thank you all for that, your comments on that. Appreciate the discussion.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Irving. I think you raised some excellent points, and I think it was a difficult decision for commissioners to make, so I hope you feel like we gave it due.
You gave it a good shot. Okay. So with that, may I make a motion? Any further discussion?
I don't see any more, so if speaker lights on, so please go forward.
I move approval of conditional use permit DRC 2011-00006 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A as modified and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? I guess not. So, Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0.
Mr. Chairman, before you break for lunch, I did do some research into if it would be possible to not have the March 29th meeting. And the item that is scheduled for that meeting has been noticed for public hearing, as has the items that are scheduled for the 22nd. So looks like you're on the hook for both meetings.
Is there such a thing as a re-notification that changes the I'm being serious. Can it be modified by another notice?
Sure, you could re-notice. The applicant in the case of the 29th is anxious for his hearing and would not be pleased with that outcome, as he's been told that this is his hearing date. The notice was actually done on the 10th of this month.
So moving it forward, that would compress the other agendas?
Actually, it wouldn't be possible. We wouldn't be able to meet our noticing requirements.
I see. Okay. All right.
Let me clarify here. I said it wouldn't be available May 31st. It's actually May 24th. The regular meeting date. So
we'll make a note of that.
I will note that.
At best, I'd be available half day and probably not at all on that 24th of May.
Okay. As discussed earlier this morning, the commission is going to take a recess, a rather long one, call it lunch, I suppose, and this hearing will reconvene at 1:30 p.m. this afternoon. Thank you. Commission ready? I reconvene this afternoon session of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. It's February 23rd, 2012. First thing I'd like to do is to express the Commission's appreciation to all of you who came this morning, anticipating perhaps that we would get to the Acceleron presentation this morning, might have been somewhat inconvenienced, but there was a last-minute cancellation on one item, a continuation, and we felt it was the right thing to do to take an extended recess and begin the Acceleron hearing this afternoon so that everyone who had an interest would be here and hear the presentations from the beginning. And so, again, thank you so much, and apologies for any inconvenience that may have occurred. Nicole, would you please introduce the item?
Hearing to consider a request by Acceleron for a conditional use permit, DRC 2009-00002, county file number DRC 0002, Supervisorial District 4, John McKenzie, project manager.
Ms. Carroll, would you like to make some introductory remarks?
Just a couple of comments. I'm Ellen Carroll, the environmental coordinator, and I just want to take a minute to introduce the staff and consultants today. We have Jason Giffen, our planning director here. We have John Nall, our principal environment.
And take care of that before you begin your presentation and we get into the hearing further. So, Commissioner Christensen.
Yes, I actually was here for the scoping meeting a couple years ago and spoke to the Wasna Valley Association at that point. I cannot remember exactly what we talked about, but I wanted to just remind people that ex parte. And then I did go on a field trip with a county staff member and Carol Florence, the applicant's representative, to see the site of the project a couple weeks ago. So that's my only ex parte. Thanks.
I, too, had a site visit with Ms. Florence and Mr. Robeson of the county staff and met briefly with Mr. Davis, attorney for In-N-Out Burger, and Mr. Skinner, I believe, is the president of the Wasna Valley Association. And I also had an ex parte conversation with Jim Peterson of Templeton, who is an oil geologist. Thank you.
I also went on a site visit with Ms. Florence from Oasis Associates, and also along on that site visit was Ted Earing, I think he pronounces his name, who is a geologist and advisor to the applicant. I also have a friend and acquaintance who is an oil industry geologist who sent me an email, and I believe that email also was copied to staff and published publicly, expressing his opinions about the project.
And I went on a site visit with Ms. Florence, I'm sorry, Bill Robeson, a county staff. We just toured the site.
Yes, I'd like to report a site visit on February 9th with Carol Lawrence, Ted Earing, Bill Robeson, and Commissioner O'Grady, who happened to be the same site visit. And met yesterday with Ron Skinner and Tom Davis. And also, I probably should mention that I sent some correspondence to County Council and to staff regarding a website I found. It's CalFire website through the Sacramento Bee on wildfire perimeters, and in which mentions major wildfires in the area south of Huasna Valley Road, or Huasna Road, excuse me, and this was I had sent this originally out to some fellow hazard mitigation specialists at Cal Poly, and then I forwarded on because I wanted to make sure that this was accurate information, and I have copies of that for the commission at such time as it's appropriate to pass them out, and also staff has copies that will be handed out at the break, or after the break, I guess. So,
thank you, Commissioners. Mr. McKenzie.
Thank you. With that, I would just like to go ahead and start with order of the day, if you will, just if you're the chair, so would desire just kind of an overview there. I'll be providing a staff presentation. Applicant will make a presentation, then there'll be public testimony, and then the Planning Commission would have the opportunity then to ask questions with the staff responding. Commission would then go through deliberations and ultimately a decision. So with that, I just, you know, this is a project, this is an industrial project that's being proposed in a rural community, and that's pretty much what the balance of my presentation will be revolving around. First, I'd like to start off with the location of the project. It's in the Huasna Valley, or just outside of the Huasna Valley, as shown on this graphic, with the red rectangular shape. It is off of Huasna Townsite Road on the Mankins Ranch property, about a mile and a half on that ranch road. The graphic here is showing you the access road, the truck haul route. It has it's both the purple dot or pink dot and solid line, with the solid line indicating the county roads and the pink dots indicating private ranch roads. And this is briefly just talk about the phases. There's a four-phase project. Phase one would be exploration and testing for up to four wells. There would be produced a water injection well as a part of that exploration and testing. Phase two, should it be successful and viable, there would be construction of a permanent production facilities. Phase three would be a site cleanup of previous components that weren't fully cleaned up, as well as other site cleanup that would relate to this project at the appropriate times. Phase four would be for the future field development, which would include an additional eight wells above the four that were originally installed as a part of phase one, should the project be commercially viable. This is a quick summary of the outputs of certain parts of the project. Comparing phase one and phase four, phase one being the testing and exploration. Oil production could be as much as 500 barrels per day. There would be propane use of 1,000 gallons per day. Produced water, there's kind of an oil-water mix when it's extracted from the formation, would be 200 barrels per day, and there would be up to three oil truck trips per day. And for most categories, that would double at the point when this field would have been in full development with the 12 wells. There would be an increase in produced water over time, but I'll not bore you with some of those details at this point unless you need to know. The next slide here is showing you the three areas kind of drilling down into the site. Access road from the Mankins Ranch would first get you to the shipping site, which is the, I guess, well, you can see where it's located here in the middle of the graphic. And then as you head south, you work your way around to well pad one, and then that goes on up to well pad two, which is the most visible which is what is visible publicly as a part of the project. A couple of pictures on each of the areas that would be developed. This is a couple of shots of the shipping site in its current state. This is well pad one, and there's well pad two. And this is a view of a part of the Huasna Valley as taken from well pad 2. And about in the middle of this graphic is Huasna Townsite Road, right about in that area right there, with my arrow. Large truck access to the facility would be via Porter Ranch Road in red. And again, as I mentioned, cars and pickup trucks would be using Huasna Road to the north and west. This is showing you the various steps in the permitting process. The main reason for this slide is to identify, I'll just show you those steps, but more importantly, the public was involved in the process, which are delineated here in yellow. I'd like to just touch upon the EIR that was prepared. The EIR did identify 5 Class 1 impacts, primarily relating to visual resources, with the visibility of pad 2, some of the grading activities, the fuel modification, the drilling rig are all part of the what would be visible as a part of pad 2 development. Noise was another issue. Drilling is a very loud activity. There are residences. There is one residence that's about 1,170 feet from the project that's close enough to hear quite a bit of noise. I'll get into that a little bit more. Another issue is odors, which is mostly limited to potential risk of upsets, or which would relate to equipment failure. Those is when odors would be mostly potentially occurring. Under biological resources, we identified that there is potential for accidental oil spills that would be close to sensitive biological receptors, namely the riparian areas, the waterways. In this case, the red-legged frog is the primary species of most concern. And lastly, the EIR identified land use consistency. There were several areas where the project would be considered inconsistent with several goals and policies within our land use documents. This graphic is identifying the residences within the area. The one residence identified here is showing you which is the closest one to pad 2, which is about 1,170 feet away. The property line here, while not depicted, is about 100 feet from pad 2 to the southwest. The reasons for denial are land use inconsistencies, neighborhood compatibility, fire safety, constraints, namely there's flooding issues, traffic issues, and nighttime for at least one residence. The other document that was had most inconsistency with the project was a conservation open space element. And here we have 3 goals and policies that were of most concern. One of them is preserving a natural and historic character and identity of the rural area. You know, this would be introducing a pad and activities that would be visible. It would be introducing noise that's much louder. There's a very quiet rural community currently at the one residence. That's most impacted. Its nighttime noise level is at 26 decibels. The project would be more than doubling the noise loudness at around a 45 decibel level. There's talking a little bit about policy BR26, which is dealing with the threatened and rare endangered species. In this case, as I mentioned, that the red-legged frog is the one of most concern that does exist within the Huasna River area, and the project will be trucks will be traveling along this Huasna River for several miles. And again, potential for spill was identified as a concern within the EIR and a Class 1 impact. I'll talk a little bit about neighborhood compatibility, visual resources. The primary concern is well pad 2. Visual issues will relate to drilling. The rigs will be up for about a 10-day period, with actual drilling occurring for a 2 to 6-day period. They're 115 feet in height. There is ongoing maintenance that occurs with these kinds of projects. They call them workovers and I'm sorry, and re what is it? I can't think. It just and those again will involve rigs coming in to come in and clean out the holes that exist. There's phase one equipment that will be very visible. At the initial outset, there will be quite a bit of grading and fuel modification as a part of CAL FIRE requirements. That will clear out quite a bit of vegetation around this well pad two for the access road and the pad itself. The vegetation modification will need to be maintained on an ongoing basis to minimize fuel or minimize wildland fires, which may conflict with the competing intent, which is to encourage vegetation to provide for screening of these intermittent and permanent equipment that would be on this pad. The project will include a shipping site. It will have its own amount of it's while it's recessed in a valley and will not be seen directly. It will result in additional lighting that will be only seen as a glow in an area that's considered very dark. So that will be a change for the area. Noise, as I mentioned, very quiet community. 26 decibels is very, very quiet. The drilling does exceed the thresholds. As I mentioned, there will be a doubling of the noise loudness for a number of residents within the area. Odors, there will be there could be some relating to potential spills and equipment failures, which do occur occasionally on these kinds of projects. And hydrogen sulfide may be an issue. We just don't know at this point. This is a visual simulation for well pad 2. You can see the visibility of it, and this is taken from the Hwasna town site road vantage. Talk a little bit about fire safety as another concern. Response time, well, there's three primary responders. None of them are closer than 30 minutes to the entrance. There is additional travel time that wasn't estimated relating to the ranch road and getting to the shipping site as well as to well pad 2, which is about 2.5 miles ultimately to get to that point. This is a very high fire hazard area, very heavy vegetation, very steep slopes. There is limited access. The ranch road that they'd be using would be considered a one-way ranch road for bigger vehicles to be able to get in and out. Twitcher Reservoir and the Porter Ranch Road is another concern. There is potential as Twitcher Reservoir fills and nears capacity, it does flood Porter Ranch Road, and that will basically when that occurs, sometimes it's for a short period for a few days, but it has occurred for up to 343 days per event. It only happens around about every 6 years for a number of activities. And just one issue relating to an item that Commissioner Topping brought up as fire history. We did provide a map here that does show the fire history since 1950 for the last 60 plus years and with an arrow with the approximate location of the project site, showing you that there has been fire in the area, but nothing on the site specifically. And so with that, the planning staff is recommending denial of the request. So our recommendations will be for denying the application for a conditional use permit to establish these wells, and staff also recommends that your commission adopt the findings, including attachment B of the staff report. And that will conclude staff's presentation.
Well, thank you. Let me get my mic energized here. Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. Mr. Nall, did you have anything that you wanted to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, not at this time. Thanks okay. for asking.
You're welcome. Okay, I would open the... Well, before I open the hearing for public comment, I'd just like to say that I'm inclined to defer commissioner questions at this time unless any commissioner really has a burning desire. I want to maximize the amount of time that we spend here this afternoon on public comment. So, okay, thank you for your cooperation on that. And before we jump into public comment, just to go over some of the rules and procedures for that. I have approximately 60, that's 60 speaker slips, and 3 minutes is the maximum amount for public comment, exclusive of the applicant's presentation. So that's 3 hours worth of public comment. Oftentimes, a speaker that precedes you may express sentiments that mirror your own. And in the interest of expediting public comment, if when you get to the podium you could just reference that and let us know that you concur with prior sentiments rather than reiterating them, that would save time. And we're going to try to get everyone an opportunity to speak here this afternoon. So we're just not going to have quite enough time to do that because we will adjourn at 5 o'clock. If you hear some things that you agree with from the podium, if you want to express your agreement, please raise your hand. But in interest of decorum, any audible comments would not be appreciated. Let's see. Also, when you come to the podium, please state your name for the record. The commission asks that you identify where you live roughly, but that is not a requirement. That is totally at your option. Just sometimes it helps the commission to put more of a context in your remarks if we know where you're from. I will be announcing next person to speak, plus a person that is on deck. And so the person who is on deck, if you would please come to the other podium so that you are ready to speak immediately after the previous speaker has concluded his remarks or his or her remarks. And that again, will try to help expedite matters. The order of the public speaking, again, exclusive of the applicant. There were a handful of speaker slips that I received this morning. They will go first after the applicant. And then I was inundated with speaker slips after lunch, and so I can't promise that they're in perfectly rigorous order, but I've done the best I could here. So I just wanted to give you an idea of how the chair was handling that. So with that, I welcome the applicant to make her presentation.
Thank you, Chairman O'Grady, members of the Commission. My name is Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates located in San Luis Obispo. And I want to say that I've been working with the county and most of the staff here since the 80s, so I have a very deep understanding and appreciation for the entitlement process. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of Acceleron, whose principals collectively have over 100 years of experience in the oil and gas industry worldwide. I'd also like to acknowledge the support of Acceleron's technical and environmental consultants, who for the last 6 years have worked religiously with me to form and craft the project description, to modify it as required, and to...
I've got 5 copies of my...
Certainly. Mr. Jagelman, have you turned in a speaker slip?
Sorry?
Have you filled out what we call a speaker slip?
I haven't. I'm sorry. But
okay. When you're finished at your convenience, that would be fine.
I apologize.
Okay. That's all right.
I'm a representative of Acceleron LLC, and we commenced this project in 2006, and on the advice of our professional consultants, we applied for a permit to drill 4 exploration wells. We were advised that the county ordinances specifically allowed for and encouraged exploration permits before applying for a permit for full development. 3 years later, following extensive review, the county recommended in March 2009 that a permit to drill four exploratory wells should be approved pursuant to a mitigated negative declaration. Just prior to the hearing for this exploration permit, we were requested to withdraw that application and instead submit to an environmental impact report. This request arose as a result of the Hawassa Valley Association had requested, amongst other things, that details of a full field development scenario to be provided in the event that the exploration stage was successful. Although it was difficult for us to forecast, and at the time I pointed this out, and to commit what full field development would look like without the exploration data available, we complied. We withdrew the application and prepared a phased 12-well maximum project that is now before you. Over the past 6 years, Acceleron has spent over $4 million to provide an exhaustive and independent professional response to all the issues and concerns that have been raised about this project. We negotiated a private easement for project truck traffic because this was a very significant issue at the beginning of the project, and voluntarily we limited ourselves to a maximum of 1,000 barrels a day in effort to keep the project compact, compatible with the area. And this also limited the number of truck movements to 6 a day. The independent third-party review of the project culminated in the recently released EIR, which verifies that the project would not have any major environmental impacts. Unfortunately, in certain important areas, the facts set out in the EIR have not been accurately presented in the staff report for this hearing. On February the 15th, we prepared a detailed response to these inaccuracies, and Carol Florence will summarise and address these matters later. I've provided you with a brief history to emphasise that we have a long-term commitment to this project. We have had leases with mineral right owners for over 5 years, and recently we have renewed those leases for a further 5 years. These mineral right holders include local residents and descendants of the historical residents in the area. These individuals have trusted Acceleron to explore their interests. Acceleron has made a commitment to these individuals to do so in an environmentally and fiscal responsible manner, and we take that commitment very seriously. We also want to be a good neighbour to the current residents of the valley. The county cannot and should not deny the mineral rights owners the right to explore their mineral rights. In short, the rights of the mineral owners and those landowners supporting this project should be recognised and protected. We believe this is a project that will benefit the county in many ways, and in addition have instigated the Solar for Schools non-profit corporation, which in the event that we proceed to development, Acceleron could potentially provide funding up to $365,000 per year to be used to install solar systems and other green energy technologies at local schools. In conclusion, it is important that you understand the history of the project as well as the factual and technical details so that you can understand the true project, so that you can understand the impact the project will have in order that you make an informed decision. Thank you very much for your time.
Welcome, Mr. Tegelman. I'm the chair of this hearing, and I do not appreciate those kinds of outbursts. I will conduct this hearing in a very fair-minded way. So, let's just try to agree to that.
Okay.
Please.
Okay, my name is Dr. Arthur Halloran. I'm from Calgary, Canada. I'm the CEO of United Hunter, and I initially wanted to thank the county and especially John Pearson for the very good, professional, solid EIR report that was. I drove the road. It's the risk for any kind of potential accident is too high. There is no way we would ever use that road for heavy trucks. So that can be done as a condition because there's no way we'll go back on that. I can also personally state if I actually thought that this project was harmful to the environment or to the way of life for the Hawassa people, I wouldn't do it. I've been in the industry for 31 years. I've worked in, I can't remember, 17, 20 countries. I would not go back on my environmental ideas or rules or my professional conduct. There is no way. And many people here present today know me from the five public outreach meetings Acceleron had after the DEIR was released. And they know that I listened to comments and questions. I tried to answer them the best I was able to. And I know that they're good people. And I know that Acceleron will be a good neighbor, a good corporate citizen, will provide jobs, benefits such as solar for schools, and it'll be a good project for the county. And that's about all I have to say for this.
Thank you, Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the Commission, Carol Florence again. While the staff report is disappointing and rather breathtaking in its bias and factual errors, we've noted those in our comments to you. The EIR, we believe, is based on credible and scientific data. It's a conservative document and perhaps has overstated some of the issues, but has also provided mitigation measures commensurate with the impact and fairly typical for CEQA mitigation measures. So this afternoon, I'm asking you to trust the CEQA process, and I'm asking you to support the project. So I'd like to focus on the Class 1 impacts, the three temporary construction-related impacts of visual, noise, and the related inconsistency with the land use policies, and the two permanent impacts to biological resources due to the unlikely event of a spill and odor under upset conditions. Realistically, these impacts would happen with any oil project or, frankly, with many projects, and are not specific to this project and certainly not a reason to deny the project. I want to thank all of you for visiting the site with me, as well as the Porter Ranch, because I think without that firsthand knowledge, what I'm about to tell you certainly would not resonate as clearly. Regarding visual resources, as if you've read our comments in the actual DEIR, we believe that the Class 1 short-term impact is overstated and can be mitigated to a less than significant level. I would like to enter into the record, which I have already done with the Secretary, our consultant benchmarks WellPad 2 visual impact assessment, which the Planning Commissioners have a copy of. Aside from providing a more technical analysis of the visual resources, they also corrected the baseline condition. What I mean by that is the existence of the two rather large storage tanks that were on pad 2. I think what this document more importantly established is that the county has recently and repeatedly documented its position on other projects that the temporary presence of construction equipment or ground disturbance does not result in a significant visual impact. So why then is the Acceleron project being held to another standard? Regarding noise, I will certainly allow Dr. DeBink testimony to get to the heart of the technical and policy issues, but I just want to reiterate again that noise is a temporary construction impact and really cannot be the basis for the finding that the project is incompatible with the county land use policies. I'm going to quote from the MRSEIR that states, the noise level would not increase above what is recommended in the noise element, unquote. So if this project is inconsistent with the noise element and other county land use policies, this should have been disclosed in the administrative draft, in the public draft EIR, and the final EIR, and it was not. Additionally, the EIR was very clear in mitigation measure N.2-1 that requires us to employ measures to minimize noise at the closest residence to 45 decibels. plainly said, if we have various mitigation measures, we are confident that the probability of a catastrophic event is extremely low. With that said, I'd like to turn the podium over to Dr. DeBink, and I'll just make one closing statement after that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David DeBink. I live in Los Osos, California. I can certainly appreciate the concerns of the Hawassena Valley residents, but as an experienced environmental planner, I also appreciate the importance of basing decisions on facts and on adopted policy. The central issue here is whether the sounds from Acceleron activities violate county policy. And there's a residual question of whether, even if the noise standards are met, there are significant lifestyle or long-lasting environmental impacts in the valley. And in my opinion, the answer is no to both questions. I have three issues with the staff report. But first, I'd like to establish a reference point for talking about the decibels that keep getting used in noise studies. First, a normal conversation is heard at a level of about 65 decibels. So that's probably about what you're hearing my voice now, although it's going through an amplification. Also, so there is no confusion, it is important to distinguish between two metrics that get used in community noise studies. An hourly energy average called LEQ is used to describe sounds as they vary over time, in the case of an hour. California planning guidelines apply another metric, LDN. This averages sounds over a 24-hour period with a 10 dB penalty added to nighttime sound. With that background, I'll cover the three issues I have with the staff report in its characterization of project noise. First, the staff report does not follow the EIR on the central question of whether the project meets county standards. It states, quote, the recommended mitigation, that's noise control measures, would reduce noise levels at all receptors to less than levels specified in the county standards. The staff report, and you've just heard it, says the opposite. Quote, up to 10 of the 13 sensitive receptors would experience noise exceeding the 45 decibel threshold. Second, your commission is being asked to adopt findings declaring that, quote, the anticipated noise levels at the closest house during drilling is estimated at 60 decibels. Property line noise levels could be as high as 94. These levels exceed acceptable nighttime noise levels. It's likely that the writer of this finding is confusing the noise metrics that I just mentioned. The EIR includes the 60 dB estimate, but the noise is in the LDN metric. That's the weighted 24-hour metric. There can't be a nighttime standard for LDN because the metric already includes an entire day. Moreover, the noise levels reported in the EIR describe conditions before implementing the recommended noise control measures. The 94 dB figure has its origins in the EIR, but the number comes from a short-term single-event measurement. It is not the hour-long energy level that's used in the county codes. Finally, the staff report says county regulations prohibit construction work after 9 p.m. I'm quite familiar with the code, and I read it differently. It provides an exemption to the standards for construction work when it occurs during daylight hours, but it does not prohibit nighttime work. While the EIR finds that the project with mitigations meets county requirements, it adds a supplemental standard to assess the residual impact. It considers how the project might alter ambient levels. This is an appropriate approach, but the county has not adopted a consistent policy on how to define baseline conditions and exactly what levels of change constitute a significant change. The EIRs for both the Topaz and SunPower projects included this sort of analysis. The CEQA significance criteria from these projects was then carried over into the instructions that went out to the potential preparers for the EIR. The two solar farm projects used the LDN, day-long metric, in assessing the change from baseline. But the instructions that went to the consultants did not specify which metric was to be used. For the Acceleron EIR, the consultant chose a different one, the LEQ for the quietest hour. There's an additional change. The solar project instructions apply the analysis to permanent changes in the sound level. In the instructions, this was broadened to include any change in the sound level. Now, if the Acceleron project used the same standard as the solar projects, the conclusions they reached would have been quite different. L metric to set baseline, setting a significance change level at 3 dB above that. An MRS project done in Whittier for a similar drilling project also used LDN for computing the CEQA standard using a change of 5 dB as a significant level.
Mr. DeBink, would you kindly summarize your presentation? Do you have much further to go?
Actually, I do not. If you'd bear with me for exactly half a minute, I can conclude.
Thank
that.
You for...
I was just going to say that the CEQA documents that they produced for the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria refinery did not use this threshold criteria at all. They just based it upon county standards. My summary is that the commission...
I was just off by a little bit, right?
Yeah, the commission is being asked to adopt a resolution based on a staff report that contains conclusions and findings that are inconsistent with the data that's presented in the EIR. There are uncertainties about which metrics are getting used. It is evident that the significance criteria previously applied to other projects is markedly different than those that are being applied to Acceleron. I think it's a benefit to everyone if standards are consistently applied from project to project in the county. Even if I were opposed to the Acceleron project, I'd want to have the Planning Commission's findings be grounded in fact and in policy. Thank you for your attention. I do have a further remark on concerning audibility, which I guess has just been raised by the staff, but I would only offer that if I were invited to make a comment.
We will bring you back as the should the need arise.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. I know that was a lot of very technical information and appreciate you bearing with us, but it is critical to the point this afternoon. Dr. DeBink will provide you with his written comments as well. I just want to tell you that we accept that there are going to be objections to this project. And based on that, I would appreciate the opportunity to address the Planning Commission's questions, but also be able to provide factual evidence during the public comment period or prior to the close of that period.
That is normal policy for this commission.
Thank you. In closing, I would just say that someone is always going to be unhappy, and someone is always going to feel inconvenienced by a new development in their neighborhood. I would just ask, can we let these objections determine every outcome? Can't we recognize that energy choices will create problems, but they also involve compromise? It is incumbent upon you as the planning commissioners and the seated decision-making body today to weigh the controversy and the emotions, the scientific data in the EIR, against the benefits of the project, which we believe are numerous. Jobs, both temporary and permanent, substantial tax revenue to the county, energy independence for the United States, and Acceleron's new public not-for-profit corporation, Solar for Schools, to name a few of those benefits. I appreciate your careful deliberation this afternoon, and I certainly thank you for the time that you've afforded us.
Well, thank you, Ms. Florence. In the interests of education, I suppose, for everyone about rules of testimony, on the back of the agenda, it indicates the applicant is entitled to 15 minutes of presentation. In this particular case, it was a little over 20 minutes, 22, 23 minutes, something like that. In view of the special circumstances on this particular project, I chose as chair to use my discretion to allow additional time for the applicant to make a thorough presentation. In the interest of best informing everyone what their what their position is on the project. I do intend to be similarly flexible should there be groups speaking in opposition to this project. So in the interest of fairness, I will be even-handed about that. Now, that's not individuals. Individuals, as I mentioned before, can speak for 3 minutes and hopefully shorter so that we afford everyone who wants to speak publicly on the project the opportunity to do so today before 5 o'clock. So the first speaker slip I have is L.J. Hansen. And on deck is Esther Holliday.
Estar.
Okay.
Chairman O'Grady and commissioners, my name is L.J. Hansen.
United States is refined gasoline to Asian markets, and that the price of gasoline, the price of barrels of oil, is more related to speculation on Wall Street than it is to domestic production. So we don't need that bugaboo hanging over our heads. In terms of this particular project, it started out as 4 exploratory wells. We remember the exploratory wells that were first dug by Mr. Mankins and how the contaminated wells were left behind to be cleaned up by taxpayer money. So the externalities of any such production are of concern to us. The 4 exploratory wells seems to have changed in number in the various presentations I've gone through, and the amount of land that has been leased has been rumored to be up to 1,000 acres in the adjacent area. And if fracking has been ruled out, certainly slant drilling has not. And there is going to be an impact to the land and the geology as a result of that. In terms of the jobs that are going to be created, if you look at any other such oil projects, the jobs are primarily construction jobs. I remember the Yellowstone oil spill was slow in being stopped because the person in charge of the Yellowstone River oil spill was in Houston, Texas. And I expect that a lot of the monitoring of this well will be done from remote locations as well. We see what's been happening with some of this kind of oil exploration around the country. And we need to be very careful before we destroy a community to consider the advantages versus the disadvantages. I don't see in any of the presentations that I've been to an concern for the cost of the externalities of this project. The high cost in health, money, quality of life for the present residents, the incredibly high financial cost of cleaning up the mess it'll inevitably leave behind once the profit level drops and the developers move on, which has happened more often than not. And I urge you all to remember when the original owner, Mr. Mankins, what he left behind. Remember what BP left behind in the Gulf. Research the unprecedented earthquakes and contamination in the East Coast states already cursed with projects such as this one, and forego the customary political band-aids usually applied to big money projects like this, and vote for your neighbors, your constituents, and your own family's best interests.
Thank you, Ms. Holliday. Next up, Michael Wynn, and on deck, Tom Davis.
Thank you, Chairman O'Grady. Commissioners, my name is Mike Wynn, and I'm the chairman of the Water Resources Advisory Committee for the Board of Supervisors. We did have an informational report given to the RAC in our February meeting, and there was public comment taken, lots of questions and answers by our members, as well as public comment by 3 residents from WASDA. But because no Class 1 impacts were identified for water, and your staff report today does not report any either, we did not instigate a formal study, and we are not making a recommendation on this one way or the other. And we try to stay very focused on water, so I will not go beyond that. Our members are made up of people who have all sorts of very earnest concerns about things in the county, and they may speak to those concerns, of course, as individuals, but the RAC will not. The issue of hydraulic fracturing has been brought up repeatedly in the context of this project. We understand that it's not a good candidate for that, but nonetheless, we're fairly ignorant. And so we have approached the Board of Supervisors, and very recently they gave us an encouragement to go ahead and hold a public hearing of an informational sort about fracking. And we have not scheduled that yet, but it will be advertised widely. And again, it's not designed about this project, but just to help us understand what that technology, which is old technology, 40 years old, what it can do, what it will not do, and so forth. I have asked County Council to give us an opinion as to what sort of response Dogger would have to have or have to give to them if they chose to impose restrictions on such wells, and we have not heard any response back yet on that. But that would be a fairly important thing for us to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Next up, Tom Davis on deck. Pat Cap or Cappy? I'm.
It's Cap.
It's Cap.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Honorable Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Tom Davis, and I represent In-N-Out Burgers, which has been, and I've been retained to comment on Acceleron's application for a conditional use permit. I know it's a bit unusual for a fast food chain to be commenting on a project like this, but In-N-Out Burgers owns a 4,834-acre ranch in the Hoosna Valley, and that is why we're here. It's so quiet. On my trips, I observed passels of wild boars and gangs of wild turkeys and deer and hawks and several other species of birds. I stopped and parked and spent some time just walking up and down the Hoosna Road, and it's a quiet place. I didn't observe any large trucks. I didn't observe any construction equipment. I've also driven across the bridge at the Hoosna River and looked down the Porter Ranch Road, where I didn't see a single vehicle or a single building. I really think it's a valley we should seek to preserve. The project which Acceleron proposes would, if constructed, change all of that in our view, and it would change it for the worse. The staff has done an excellent job in highlighting some of these issues and the flaws of this project and the numerous ways in which the project is inconsistent with the San Luis Obispo County General Plan and other policies of this county. We brought with us today two consultants who are lined up to testify after me. One is Mr. Pat Capp, who's a civil engineer with 40 years of experience as a civil engineer, and he's going to testify about what the real impacts are of the proposed use of Porter Ranch Road. We think the EIR and the applicant have wholly understated what will need to happen to that road for it to be used as it's proposed to be used. For example, the applicant in the EIR says that only 0.4 acres will be disturbed by the improvements that are necessary to that road. Mr. Capp will testify that at least 26 acres will be disturbed. And because of this, the EIR doesn't even mention what the impact, environmental impacts of that kind of a disturbance to the habitat will be. And most of this road is either in the Twitchell Reservoir or alongside the Hoosna Creek. The second person we brought to testify today is Mr. Carl Rodenbaugh, who's a senior scientist with the Planning Center, and he's going to discuss the increased fire hazard the project will pose and speak briefly to the issues of noise and air quality. In conclusion, let me say once more that this project's not good for Hoosna Valley. It's not good for San Luis Obispo. The impacts on the environment are too great, and the risks associated with it outweigh any possible benefit. There is no overriding consideration that can justify approval of this project. We urge you to adopt the findings of the staff and to deny Acceleron's application for a conditional use permit. Thank you,
Mr. Davis. Mr. Pat Capp, and then on deck is Carl Rodenbaugh.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat Capp, J.P. Capp, Civil Engineers, 81601 Rustic Canyon Drive in La Quinta, California. I've been retained by Mr. Davis, and my comments will be limited to the access road. Actually, it's a 9.65-mile long access road from Highway 166 to the Mankins Ranch Road. And I just have some brief points which I'd like to bring to your attention. I brought along a graphic which is included in a report that I provided to Mr. Davis and which has been presented to you along with all of these graphics. The 9.65 access road, 4.1 miles of it lies within the Twitchell inundation zone. And we believe that should be reviewed by all the local and the state water resource agencies, as well as the state and federal resource agencies. Significant reaches of the Porter Ranch Road will require realignment to accommodate the construction equipment. This impacts the areas adjacent to the roadway, and with grading and losses of trees. The entire width of the Porter Ranch roadway will be required regrading to accommodate the aggregate surface to handle the construction traffic. And the impact of these two items, items 2 and 3, is that the ground disturbance area, as mentioned in the EIR, in reality is 15 acres rather than the 4/10 of an acre. The existing Wasna River Bridge will have to be relocated, and once again, the resource agencies should be, and the water agency should be reviewing that. The Porter Ranch Road is required to be constructed to rural road standards prior to the commencement of the second phase. The applicant should be required to have the water agency and resource agency clearances for a 26-foot wide AC paved road prior to approval by the Planning Commission. The additional disturbed area resulting from that widened road is 11.6 acres for a total of 26.67 acres of disturbance for that entire roadway. Prior to approval, the project should provide copies of the executed agreement with the owners of the Porter Ranch Road property, and the applicant should provide a WQMP, should be providing a document for the in the event of a spill along the roadway. And I believe that the
also prepared comments on those responses. Very briefly, we'd like to comment that we agree that noise is a Class 1 impact, but we also believe that the impacts could be greater than are described in the EIR. If, for example, the impulse maximum noise impacts were considered and not just the 1 hour average noise impact. With respect to H2S odor, we also agree that that's a Class 1 impact, but we also believe that the impacts from H2S odor on the Wasna Valley residents could be greater than described in the EIR, depending on model inputs and to the extent to which the local meteorology is considered. Inversion layers form in the valley and tend to concentrate pollutants at the valley floor. I would also like to note that the HRA, the health risk assessment in the EIR, did not include an analysis of health impacts of criteria air pollutants, carbon monoxide, PM10, and NOx. That's an analysis that we routinely do in environmental impact reports, and I know that it was done for the Conoco EIR in Santa Maria, but not the Exelon EIR. And with respect to fire hazard, it's our opinion that that should be a Class 1 impact, given that the project site is located in a very high fire hazard severity zone. The project would introduce multiple ignition sources. It would introduce large quantities of flammable gas, flammable liquids. It's in a remote location, no permanent on-site water source. To us, that would be, despite the mitigation proposed, that would be a Class 1 impact. So in closing, I would say that we've also reviewed the staff report that the Planning Commission staff prepared, and we agree with their analysis and findings that led them to recommend denial of the conditional use permit based on the significant noise, odor, and fire impacts. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Rodenbaugh. Next up, David Lord, and on deck, John Fricks. Excuse me, Mr. Fricks?
I don't think he could come this afternoon.
Oh, okay. Please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, commission.
My name is David Lord. I'm in San Luis Obispo, an acoustics consultant. And my comments will be directed only at noise chapter 4.11 of the EIR. Excuse me. I submitted previously a 16-page review of that chapter, which should be in the record. Let me begin by saying that I just earlier heard the statement that the EIR, as all EIRs hopefully are, is based on credible and scientific data. And that's my point in my acoustics review. Acoustics 101, or the bedrock of acoustical measurement, depends on the definition of the instruments that are used to measure and the technique in which the measurements are made. Measurements can vary wildly depending on the way in which the measurements are made. Excuse me. There are three standards authorities, the ANSI, American National Standards Institute, NIST, National Institute of Standard, Science and Technology, and, excuse me, and the, lost my place. The Standards Institute that prescribes the method of noise measurement. And nowhere in this EIR Chapter 4.11 did I see any mention of these standards, and nowhere did I see further a mention of the way that the noise measurements were taken, on which date the noise measurements were taken. Nowhere did I see the data from the noise measurements. This raised a red flag for me because I would like, just personally, to be able to analyze for myself so that I can believe and trust the results. And all sound level meters produced in the U.S. today measure A scale and C scale. We won't get into the definitions, but and they often measure these two scales simultaneously. So usually those scales, A scale, the human voice, C scale, more lower.
Advise not to speak with us. However, there are many Huasna Valley residents who do support this project, as well as many business leaders and citizens of this county who could not be here today because of their schedules. I'd like to read a short list of people who are in support of this project who could not be here today. We have many mineral rights owners: Lori Lawson, Bruce Gibson, Roy Marie Brown, Rick Barbazat, Louis Bishop, Diane Stowe, Herbert Jenkins, Catherine Gray, Barbara and Steve Yarborough, and John Palmer. We also have a lot of business leaders in this community who are in support of this project, like Jeff Buckingham of San Luis Obispo, John Robichotti of Arroyo Grande, Gabe Garcia, Anna Clark, Diane Blakesley Brocado, Grigor Jones of Atascadero, and Russell Miller from the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. There are many, many more on this list. And I'd like to say also, as a citizen of this county, I do support domestic oil exploration here. And I firmly believe that Acceleron will manage this project in a responsible manner. And I urge you to approve this project. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the speaker should state their name for the record.
Heather Hellman, San Luis Obispo.
Thank you. Norm Palmer.
Thank you. My name is Norris.
And on deck, Steve Palmer.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Norris W. Palmer. My apologies for the poor handwriting.
That's okay.
And I speak in favor of the Mankins Ranch project presently under consideration before the Planning Commission. I realize that you'll receive a lot of testimony today, and so I'll try and keep my comments succinct and my points clear. I'm a mineral rights owner who wants to affirm the stated position of the Huasna Valley Association in their request for thoughtful stewardship of the land. When my grandparents homesteaded there in the early 1880s, they poured their blood, sweat, and tears into the land and cared for it for many, many years. This is where my father spent his childhood, and where he learned to be a good steward as well. I do not favor careless extraction of our natural resources, but this is not, I believe, what is planned. And some persons seem to believe that the oil exploration and extraction is inconsistent with the historic character and identity of the area. Exploration and extraction has been going on in the area since at least the 1890s. There's even a creek and a site in the valley called Tar Springs. Environmental impacts do need to be thoughtfully addressed, and I believe that they have been. A few years ago, the county considered the question of whether or not energy companies should be required to avoid environmental impacts altogether or to offset them. It is my understanding that the county has traditionally followed and presently follows the latter course. I believe that the county's FEIR and the project applicant's responses to that document demonstrate both an ability and a willingness to mitigate reasonable and responsible concerns raised thus far. Point number three, judging from the number of private property and no trespassing signs on the fences and gates along Wasna Townsite Road, it seems to me that the residents in the area appropriately take property rights pretty seriously. So do I. Just as the Planning Commission needs to protect the surface rights, I would ask that the same consideration be given for mineral rights. I urge the Planning Commission to reach a position that balances and protects both sets of rights, and I urge you to approve the conditional use permit. Thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you, Mr. Norris Palmer. Steve Palmer is next, and on deck is Brad Parker. Thank you, sir.
As you might guess from the names, Norris and I are brothers. My name is Steve Palmer. I live in Cameron Park, California, near Sacramento. I'm a mineral rights owner. Our father passed these rights to us, and he's told us many times of riding in the Wasna area. He grew up on Sweet Creek Ranch. And as he was riding horses in the 20s and 30s, he saw tar seeping out of the ground. My grandparents and our parents, recognized the value of these minerals and paid taxes and invested in the lands that, in hopes that someday we might be able to benefit from this. Exploration and limited production on these lands has occurred over the decades, and I have lots of records. If you care to see them, you probably have them already. No one, including us, wishes to see damage to the environment. We have a strong connection still to the Wasna area as a family. As Norris mentioned, our grandfather homesteaded in 1883, as did his brother. While we don't want to see damage to the environment, there are ways to mitigate that, and this is why the developers of any project augment their plans to reduce impacts. I believe it's possible to explore.
First, I'd like to read into the record a letter that you may have received from Russell Miller, Assistant Superintendent of Business Services for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Dear Planning Commission, as the Assistant Superintendent of Business Services for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, I know only too well the financial struggles each and every school district in the county is experiencing. Acceleron's project proposal provides a funding mechanism for energy conservation and solar generation for the schools in San Luis Obispo County. It represents a win for our children by redistributing funds for their education, a win for our environment, and a win for the county goals of being a leader in creating sustainable, environmentally friendly development. Distributed solar voltaic projects for the schools in our county would translate to millions of dollars saved for the classroom, reduce carbon dioxide emissions by over 250 metric tons, and serve as a role model for generations of school children. And then I have some prepared remarks. As a former school district administrator responsible for facilities, energy conservation, and renewable energy projects, I would like to commend Acceleron for their commitment to fund conservation and renewable energy projects for our local schools. The Solar for Schools nonprofit corporation would present a near-term potential for approximately $350,000 a year as a funding stream. This would allow schools needing conservation to capture immediate savings on energy costs, and those schools already conserving could fund renewable energy projects like solar electric generation. This program would result in millions of dollars being saved and available to our school classrooms. To put into perspective the environmental benefit this program would generate over the expected life of the project, the EPA's greenhouse gas equivalency calculator converts an estimate of the energy saved or generated by clean renewable resources into more concrete terms. The Solar for Schools program will result in an equivalent reduction in greenhouse gas emissions equal to the CO2 emissions from 32,500,000 gallons of gasoline consumed, the carbon sequestered by 7,500,000 tree seedlings grown for 10 years, the carbon sequestered annually by 62,000 acres of pine forests, the CO2 emissions from burning 1,600 rail cars of coal. Energy conservation, development of responsible petroleum extraction projects, and funding for clean renewable energy sources, this Acceleron project accomplishes all three of these objectives. I urge the Commission and our community to support this project.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Next up, Walt Mankins, followed by Mark Satterfield on deck.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure again to address the Planning Commission on this project. The last time I was able to speak to you was in support of the solar plant out there in Carrizo Plains.
Just so we're legal, could you say your name?
Absolutely. Walt Mankins? I'm so sorry. Walt Mankins. I live in Santa Maria, California, and I have a lot of deep ties in San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you, Mr. Mankins.
I'm so sorry for that. I was so interested in getting into my story. I don't have any facts and figures. I'm just going to tell you from my heart the best I can, and hopefully, like we did with Carrizo Plains, we can get this project spun around and on course again. As an early age, I also spent a lot of time out around WASNA. My grandfather's family homesteaded in Sway Creek. His brother Alvin purchased a property in WASNA Valley. That's where I believe the oil fields, whatever, are at this time. It is very beautiful. I've spent a lot of time as a young man in the oil fields myself, working out there on a Cat Canyon and roundabout like that. I'm very aware of the technology that existed then has been greatly improved over these 50 years that I have been around. The safety, the air quality, the EIRs, I mean, all these things never existed back then. They do now. These companies are doing everything they can to abide by the regulations and whatnot that are put on them. Reading the agenda today and the planning staff's recommendation, it almost sounds like the same rhetoric that we heard at Carrizo Plains, as though there's a project playbook to deny. I hope that's not the case. I hope you guys take things into consideration. I don't know if anyone on the Planning Commission's ever spent any time in the oil fields, but believe me, times have improved. I hear people talk about realigning the highway. I hear about fires. I hear about all those things. I remember 50-plus years ago having controlled burns out there, 1,000 acres, getting rid of the vegetation so you don't have fire, burning the brush off, bringing new grass back in. The animal, the wildlife, everything prospered from that. Which is getting ready to close their doors due to the illusory accreditation. You know, there's just an awful lot of good that could come out of this. The noise level from the drilling, that doesn't go on forever. That's for a period of time to get the hole done. From there, it's quite quiet. I know with the water truck, the speed levels, 15, 20 miles an hour, whatever they'll be going out there, they're not going to be generating a lot of dust. If they're talking about hazardous materials all through our country, all through our county, there are a lot of highways that are traveled every day with all kinds of gasoline, hazardous materials, you name it. They're going across anywhere, any day, any time. There could be an accident that would lead to a cleanup. So, you know, anyway, my point is, please let this project go forward. And with that, I want to wish you a good day. And I want to thank Acceleron for attempting to spend their time and energy and money to try to get this project through. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mankins. Up next, Mark Satterfield, followed by Diane Blakesley-Brocato on deck.
Hi, Mark Satterfield, San Luis Obispo, speaking in favor of the project. Not a big fan of oil exploration, as I think a lot of people are. Although I am a big fan of domestic development and reducing our foreign dependence, foreign oil dependence, and we would all certainly wish that everything could be green and renewable, but that's not where we're at today. I think we need to support domestic oil production and development, and I would like to commend Acceleron for agreeing to use the highest quality manpower to develop their project in working with the building trades. And I do speak for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and they are going to use all the apprenticeable building trades in their development, and that's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Satterfield. Ms. Blakeslee Brocato is up next, and followed by Carl Hathaway on deck.
Hi, Dan. I like your mustache.
I added something since back then. Hi, Diane.
I'm Diane Blakeslee Brocato, and I live in the San Luis Obispo County, very near to the Price Canyon oil wells. And I've lived there since 1967 and have experienced the smell of oil only a couple of times. That's an area where Dana came to get tar to tar his boats, and where the Chumash Indians came for generations to get tar to tar their baskets. So we've had oil drilling going on for quite some time. I do not know Mr. Mankins. I have never had him as a client. The only time I saw him was 40-some years ago when my late husband was the symphony conductor, and I came to the Board of Commissioners for a request of the first grant from the city, from the County of San Luis Obispo to support the symphony. That's my only contact with him. I'm here because I feel passionately that we need to take a bigger look at the situation than just the 2 acres where the drilling is going to take place. The Huasna project will only encompass 2 acres, less than half the size of most supermarket properties. Acceleron has endeavored to meet all of the environmental requirements and has paid San Luis Obispo County and geologists thousands of dollars to make certain it is conforming with all the needed regulations and permits. And you just heard Carol say, please put it any restrictions that you want to. It seems recently at every turn, and to the detriment of America becoming energy self-sufficient, Washington bureaucrats and certain elements of our society with hidden agendas have successfully pushed their feel-good points of view on the public. This has manifested itself in curbing domestic oil production and leaving all of us vulnerable to the whims of Middle Eastern tyrants, terrorists, and turmoil. Please don't let the unappeasable vocal element of our county deprive us of the benefits to be gained by approving the project. 100-plus jobs, millions of dollars to pay San Luis Obispo County employees' salaries, and the desperately needed financial aid for our schools. I urge you to please look at this with an objective and a non-emotional point of view and approve the project. Thank you very much, and I commend you for staying awake through all of these testimonies.
It wasn't that obvious. I'm sorry.
Refineries which produce much-needed road asphalt, fertilizers, plastics, and lubricants. As this will be local production, it will result in a net reduction of truck traffic mileage to the refineries, as it will displace crude oil coming in from Kern County and being trucked in from other remote fields. Therefore, in the interest of the local economy and the environment, I urge you to approve the Acceleron project as it is before you today. And I thank you for the opportunity to present my views.
Thank you, Mr. Hathaway. Up next is Joan Drake, followed by Cecile DeMartini.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Joan Drake. I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. I work for a company called Opinion Studies, a survey research company located here in San Luis. I'm here today to read a statement from Robin Letters, president of the company, who is out of town today on a week-long work assignment. This is Robin's statement. In August of 2010, Acceleron contracted with Opinion Studies to conduct two projects. One was a countywide telephone survey, and the second was a public outreach effort among Wasna Valley residents. A total of 750 voters, 125 in each of the five supervisorial districts, were interviewed in the countywide survey. Among other findings, the study revealed that county residents are very concerned about jobs. In fact, they said that county officials should focus more on bringing jobs to the county. Some 15% of respondents indicated they or someone in their household had lost a job in the recent economic downturn. More importantly, and most relevant to today's hearing, is the finding that 80% of county residents indicated support for development of domestic oil reserves and increasing energy independence. That's 80% that want to see more development of domestic oil reserves. And 60% support oil drilling in San Luis Obispo County. Again, let me repeat, 60% support local oil drilling. That's an impressive number and a clear mandate that local oil drilling is acceptable to the majority of county residents. The survey also queried people to find out how many residents were aware of Acceleron's oil project in the Wasna Valley. 42% told us that they knew about the project, and 55% of those who knew about the project and had an opinion supported the project. Not surprisingly, awareness was greatest among District 4 residents, site of the project. Among this group, supporters and opposers were equal in numbers, so there is support for this project throughout the county and the vicinity of Wasna Valley. The second project we undertook was a community outreach effort among Wasna Valley residents. We attempted to talk to at least one person in nearly all 80 or so households. While not everyone would talk to us or return our calls, we did manage to connect with 42 households in Wasna Valley and 28 in nearby Sui Creek Canyon. Yes, we found opposition, but we also found that people were basing their opinions on misinformation. With this knowledge, Acceleron has continuously addressed residents' concerns and points of misinformation. In all of our outreach efforts, including those done recently, we found residents who support the project or who are being at least neutral about the project, but are concerned for their well-being if they speak out against the more vocal members of the Valley. So you may not hear from any supporters in Wasna Valley today, not because there aren't any, but because they are afraid to speak out publicly. I, says Robin, support this project for a variety of reasons. I also want to inform the commission that while I was compensated for my earlier efforts, I am now choosing to volunteer my time to help because I believe in this project. This is a worthwhile project that will provide significant benefit to the county. I am honored to speak in support of Acceleron. And that's the end of her statement. Thank you very much, Commissioners.
Thank you, Ms. Drake. Up next is Cecile DeMartini, followed by Doug Timewell on deck.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, and staff. My name is Cecile DeMartini. I'm an environmental engineer and a local business owner. For the 3 years of beginning of my career, I was involved in remediation of abandoned oil sumps in Santa Maria, often located in ag fields and sometimes, unfortunate, removed underneath neighborhoods. I also spent many months out at the Guadalupe oil field installing extraction and monitoring wells for the assessments of tens of thousands of diluent that had spilled, and it still underlies that beautiful and delicate ecosystem there. I've also reviewed volumes of studies of remediation plans for the removal of oil contamination at Avila Beach, 80% of our drinking water resources in California. The Safe Drinking Water Act, Port of Colon, and California Water Code provide the regulatory authority to protect our natural resources. in the Downey Brand letter written to the planning director on behalf of the permittee, this permittee explains that denying a conditional use permit is a weapon against the property owner's rights to mine minerals. It is, I It is more important to note that the people of California, of Arroyo Grande and Huasna Valley have the right to clean and protected water resources for life. SLO County, and they also stated that SLO County is anti-business and the county is acting above the law. I beg to differ on these two points. SLO County is by far one of the most energetic and successful counties in the nation promoting small and big business. There is nothing like it anywhere else. Additionally, the county has every authority to control land use elements. This precedent was set 2 days ago in the state of New York by the Supreme Court Justice Philip Rumsey of Tompkins County, where he upheld the ruling that local governments have the authority to regulate local land use. In conclusion, I support planning staff's recommendation to deny the applicant's request for a conditional use permit, and I encourage the planning commissioners to support that recommendation as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. DeMartini. Next up, Doug Timewell, followed by Robert Garner on deck.
Okay, good afternoon. Doug Timewell. I'm a farmer on Huasna Road. I've entered for the record a copy of the United Hunter Gas and Oil condensed financial statements through September of last year. And quite a bit of history was talked about here today, and the history in Huasna Valley oil production has been, quite amazing. Most of the companies have gone belly up and left quite an amazing, now notorious, mess that someone had to clean up, albeit in the most recent cleanup, not taxpayers' money. But if it were a wildfire or a water disaster, it very well could be. And so I'm concerned about the financial stability of the type of company that we're willing to accept as a bed partner for this pristine valley. We're going to turn over a pristine valley to a company to operate. And I think they should be of substantial financial capacity. However, United Hunter Oil and Gas, who owns 65% of Acceleron, has announced in their last financial statement, these are the last public records they've provided, that they had $400,000 in cash, okay, about $1 million in liabilities, a burn rate of about $500,000 a quarter, and stock equity, meaning the number of shares times the value of their current stock, as of today, is $6 million. This company is worth $6 million. In other words, said you or I could buy this entire company for $6 million in theory. And they have, $400,000 in cash. Now, how far is this going to go is my question and concern to cleaning up an environmental disaster in the Huasna Valley. Are they going to be able to afford, as a company, to hire the best, the best operators? Are they going to be able to make their insurance payments? And so these are some of my primary concerns, and I think we should all look at this very carefully. I wouldn't buy a car or an appliance from a company that was only had $400,000 in the bank, because I don't think they'd be able to stand behind their warranties. Anyway, that's my comments, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Timewell. Robert Garner, you will be our last speaker before we take a short break this afternoon.
Very good. My name is Robert Garner. I live on Huasna Road in Arroyo Grande. And my comments are, tanker trucks owned by the oil refineries are not applicant-controlled vehicles. When the oil produced or product produced by the applicant is transferred from the tank into the tanker truck, it becomes the property of the refinery, not Acceleron. And nowhere in their application does it address tanker trucks and their use of Huasna Road. They all represent their large trucks will only use Porter Ranch, but they never refer to the actual tanker trucks, which will be owned by refineries. Any refinery that buys their oil can go there, drive out on Huasna Road to the site. The oil transfers through the lease automatic custody transfer is what it's referred to as. And it's common in the oil industry when it's going into a tanker truck, into a ship, through a pipeline. Anytime oil is transferred, custody is transferred as soon as it goes through the valve. So I can get a contract with Acceleron, get an oil truck, drive out there, pick up oil, and drive it back over Huasna Townsite Road, down Huasna Road, and through the village of Arroyo Grande. And so, to keep it real short, if in approving or considering this project, there should be at least language involved that is legally enforceable and legally defensible. But even at that, you cannot prevent an oil refinery truck any more than a hay truck, a cattle truck, a wine truck coming down Lopez Drive onto Wasner Road and through the village of Arroyo Grande. Produce trucks, they do it all the time. And you would be powerless to prevent that. So please consider this and get exact information on who will own the oil and who will transport this oil. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garner. The commission will now take a short break and reconvene at 3:30 sharp by that clock up there in the back corner. It's 3:30, fairly sharp anyway, so I reconvene this hearing to continue on with public comment. So I think we have more than enough seats for everyone. I noticed there were folks standing. You're welcome to find a place. You're welcome to remain standing, too, if you like, but... It's going to be another hour and a half for sure. So, and speaking about that, I mentioned earlier that the commission needed to adjourn around 5 o'clock, and that's because there is another meeting in here after this, and they will need setup time in order to accommodate it. So we'll do the best we can to get all the comments in, but we still have about 30 of them left to go. So. Next up is George Hansen, followed by Ian Jackson on deck.
Hi, Planning Commissioners. Thank you for hearing me. I appreciate you taking the time to hear us. And I'm Planning Department staff. I'm sorry that Acceleron has chosen to impugn...
Please state your name.
Oh, I'm George Hansen. I live in Arroyo Grande. I'm near to the beautiful Wasna Valley. And I want to express my disappointment that the Planning Department staff has had their integrity and their hard work impugned. I think our county deserves a little better treatment than that. I'd like to say that the final EIR reflects Acceleron's presentation of an unrealistically clean and sanitized picture of what their operations will truly look like. Acceleron and their consultants have shown us pretty pictures and neat diagrams, and the EIR lays out optimistic and speculative plans for what they say they will do, but the actual process of drilling and transporting oil is, in fact, a toxic and very messy business. We have recent experience in our own region that demonstrates this. For the historical precedent, let's look at PXP's operation in Price Canyon. The Dogger spill log for 2011 reveals that there were 3 spills in the Price Canyon in 2011. They accidentally dug up a produced water line and spilled 4 barrels of produced water last year. And then that afternoon, while they're trying to repair that line, they dug up another one and spilled another 4 barrels. And on June 13th, in the Price Canyon oil field, a ruptured container there spilled 4,000 gallons of concentrated sodium hydroxide into the Pismo Creek. That chemical is 5 times stronger than liquid Drano and strong enough to dissolve flesh. That's one of those Murphy's Law things, one of the unanticipated consequences that you get in the law of unanticipated consequences. And so no matter what the EIR or what Acceleron says, it turns out it's virtually impossible for a county government to control what a oil company does once they have their drills in the ground. Let's look at PXP again. In 2005, they asked to expand their steam injection process, and that was granted, but the Planning Commission mandated that PXP would drill 4 Century groundwater monitoring wells as a condition. They dug those wells, and they were supposed to monitor the water. When they dug those wells, they produced visibly contaminated water that smelled of sulfur. They did not test it further. They said that the oil they saw there was naturally occurring. They did not inform anybody as they were mandated to do. They just said, oh, they're in the wrong rock strata, and that's why it's wrong. They didn't have to tell anybody. I called the Water Quality Control Board, I called the Dogger Office, I called the Planning Department. No one was receiving any reports. They weren't even aware they were supposed to be receiving reports. The Dogger Office was particularly unconcerned. When I asked them about the spill, they said they really weren't concerned because they said there were no aquifers in the Price Canyon area to be worried about. We know that there are aquifers there. I asked them also about the spills that had been occurring, and
cannot be fully mitigated. Greca Oil provides an example of the reality of oil drilling in our region. They are responsible for 400 onshore oil spills over a 10-year period. When Santa Barbara County tried to sue them over this contamination, Greca turned around and sued the county. No one shut down Greca's operations, despite their being the worst polluter in California. There is now a federal lawsuit against Greca for 21 spills into waterways. However, Greca has moved its financial assets overseas out of reach of the federal government and Greca's many creditors. This is a problem not just locally, but nationwide. For example, in Texas, 96% of the 80,000 violations by oil and gas drillers in 2009 resulted in no enforcement action. In our region as a whole, there were 59 on-land spills, blowouts, or fires. They occurred at virtually every oil field from Lompoc to San Ardo. Contamination of groundwater, soil, Twitchell Reservoir, and the pristine environment of Wasna Valley from spills and accidents are Class 1 impacts that cannot be mitigated. Rather than accepting Acceleron's optimistic, let's hope for the best scenario at face value, I urge you to consider the worst-case scenario and stop the threat of contamination to the region's groundwater and environment before it's beyond your control. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Jackson. Dennis Allen up next, followed by Kent Zammit.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Allen. I live in the Wasna Valley. We have a cow-calf operation right at the top of the grade. I'd like to talk about real estate values, and but I'd like to really respond to a comment that was made by the Acceleron people earlier. I am a partner in Obispo 400, which is a landowner with land along Wasna and Wasna town site. They mentioned Rick Barbazat as a supporter and a mineral holder. And, you know, I really think this is a good example of their sloppy bookkeeping and of their, you know, factual inaccuracies that they seem to perpetuate. Rick Barbazat does not own those mineral rights. We, in fact, do own them. We also had a transaction with them where they actually got a lease on mineral rights that these people didn't own, also that we owned. We know that as a matter of fact. Took me a long time, string of letters, to get them to correct their records. So I hope that their oil business is a little bit better than their bookkeeping. I'd like to speak for just a minute about the real estate values. I've been a real estate broker for many years. I've been in this county for over 35 years, and I know a little bit about real estate. I've sold quite a few rural properties and quite a few in the Wasna area. We are experiencing buyer distrust for the area because of their concern over the project. Now, Acceleron wants us to think they're going to bring 100 jobs. I don't know where that number came from. I did hear that. And also going to increase our property base. You can't increase your property tax revenue when land goes down in value. You simply can't convince me of that. So I think they better look at the record keeping. I think they have a duty to us and the public to be accurate. I would like to strongly support the position of the staff that you decline their CUP. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Kent Zammit is up next, followed by Terry Leavers, perhaps. I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce that correctly.
Kent is not here.
Thank you. Then after Terry Leavers, then Ron Skinner is on deck.
Hi, my name's Terry Leavers.
Sorry.
I live in Arroyo Grande. I would like to question the solar for schools project. What about Acceleron's refusing to install the turn lane on Highway 166 or their installation of the 360,000-gallon water tank until they've completed their phase four, until they're in phase four, versus putting it in phase one, at which time they need that water for fire prevention. They have tried to defer the expense of most important safety. They've deferred the expense of some of the most important safety mitigations, yet they are talking about giving solar panels to schools. And that seems to have come up after the staff recommended the denial, which seems a little strange to me. Also, I'd like to comment. This is from the United Hunter Oil and Gas Corp's notes to consolidated financial statements dated September 30th, 2011. This is item two, going concern. The company is in...
Babak Nafisi. Mr. Skinner.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Skinner. I am the president of the Wasna Foundation, and Babak Nafisi is our attorney, and we'll be speaking. We are both speaking on behalf of the Wasna Foundation, which represents a large number of residents in the Wasna community. The Wasna Foundation commends county staff and for their exhausting four-year investigation of the impacts of Acceleron's ever-changing project. We support staff's recommendation for denial of the Acceleron CUP. However, we also request that the commission adopt a finding that potential contamination of groundwater by Acceleron's project represents an impact that cannot be mitigated. 3 years ago, the Wasna residents hired Dr. Robert Curry, a distinguished geologist and hydrologist, to examine the potential impacts of the Acceleron project on our very tenuous and shallow groundwater. Due to health reasons, Dr. Curry was unable to attend today's hearing, so I am submitting his recent response to the DEIR comments, which you have not seen. I have it here, and we'll give it to you afterwards. And I just briefly want to summarize his main points. He has stated that the project site does not contain capped geological structures that are impermeable to the migration of fluids, and that Acceleron intends to pressurize a portion of the well field with heated water to try to mobilize the viscous tarry residues, and that will allow them to migrate to wells. That reduction in viscosity and pressure will also allow them to migrate to lower pressure regions, including the surface, which poses a risk to the shallow surface water contamination over the next century. And that risk far exceeds any short-term value of any limited oil production in the next decade. Dr. Curry's analysis is well supported by the scientific literature, and I also submit to you today as evidence of that support a summary of the conclusions of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists regarding hydrocarbon migration. It is important to note here that Acceleron's consultant, Tim Cleath, has issued an opinion regarding potential water contamination that conflicts with Dr. Curry's analysis. Mr. Cleath's conclusory opinion is not based on concrete evidence, nor is it supported by the published scientific literature, as pointed out by Dr. Curry. The EIR consultants that reviewed this hydrology issue and concurred with Mr. Cleath's opinion rather than Dr. Curry's included an oceanographer, a biologist, and a lawyer, not a qualified geologist or hydrologist. As a result, the EIR erroneously concludes that potential contamination of groundwater is less than significant with mitigation. Once again, I urge the Commission to deny Acceleron's conditional use permit and adopt findings that potential contamination of groundwater represents an additional impact of this project that cannot be mitigated. And I'd like to submit this record, I'm giving you a CD also that has all of the Dogger well logs in addition to the pertinent scientific literature that was referenced in Dr. Curry's papers so that this is all put into the record as evidence. Thank you.
You're welcome. Does that conclude your comments, Mr. Skinner?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Mr. Nafisi is up next, followed by Tracy Del Rio on deck.
Good afternoon, Planning Commissioners. I'm Bob Aknefisi. I'm a local environmental attorney. I've appeared before you before, and I'm happy to be here today. I want to briefly touch on the applicant's February 15th letter, which to me as a practicing environmental land use attorney was quite shocking, that the tone, the vituperative tone and the accusations directed at the staff and by implication the county. And I hope that whatever decision you take today, that you in some fashion respond to this letter, because I really do think deserves a strong response. There's a few legal points that I want to touch on, and then hopefully with your indulgence, I want to touch on what I believe to be the a number of inadequacies of the EIR with respect to analysis and mitigation of biological impacts, which unfortunately has not been really adequately studied by the staff either. The first thing I want to point out is that your commission, the county, has a great deal of discretion in analyzing general plan policies, county code, and the staff has great expertise in giving you advice on those issues. And any conclusion that you reach regarding what the meaning of the general plan policies and the code is not going to be easily disturbed by any court of law. And so when there's a disagreement between the conclusion, and you surely must consider all the evidence in the record and not just the EIR. The other issue is that even if you believe that in some instances the EIR's conclusion that an impact is less than significant, you still can conclude that in an area such as aesthetics or noise, despite there being a significant impact, that there is an inconsistency with general plan policies. So even if you're not convinced that the EIR is wrong about its impact analysis, you are still well within your discretion to reach a conclusion that that impact is still inconsistent with the general plan policies. Now, in this case, this area obviously has a very unique rural character, and you're well aware that there is a general plan policy in the conservation and open space element that talks about maintaining the rural character of rural areas. And that inherently doesn't lend itself to very scientific measurements about the decibels of noise impact or exactly what volume of light escapes at nighttime. It really calls for a reasoned judgment and the knowledge of the local area that you guys are uniquely qualified to make. I understand in light of the time limitation, I have to move on quickly to the biological impacts. As you heard today, the EIR does not include an adequate analysis of the engineering impacts that, or the impacts from building the road on Porter Ranch. And in fact, the EIR in the biological section admits that it couldn't analyze the biological impacts on the federally protected red-legged frog because there's no engineering report. This is very significant because you may not really reach the conclusion that the impact on red-legged frog would be reduced to less than significant because, for one thing, you don't really know what those impacts will be because there's no adequate study of it. The other issue, I mean, why this is important is because there will be a lot of subtle changes in the hydrology, vegetation cover, composition of vegetation in that area. And all those subtle changes in how much water is available, what time of the year, and what shade is provided could have a significant effect on this federally protected species. In addition to that, the mitigation that the EIR proposes is really shockingly simplistic. It says basically something like a qualified biologist should capture whatever stage of life of red-legged frog it finds and simply move it to the next suitable habitat. That is simply not the kind of adequate mitigation, thoughtful mitigation measure that's required under CEQA. And so based on the evidence in the record and the inadequacy of the mitigation measures in the EIR, you simply cannot reach a conclusion that the impact on this federally protected species would be adequately mitigated. There is no adequate cumulative impact analysis on the red-legged frog across its habitat throughout the county. So that's another vitally defective area.
Can you complete your comments within a minute or so?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
The final point regarding biological impacts is that state law requires that when a project affects the habitat of an endangered or federally protected species, that there has to be consultation with Department of Fish and Game and written findings from the department be included in the record, which was not done here. There is some reference to some oral communication with DFG, but there's no set of written findings. So if you decide that you're not going to, if you decide to certify the EIR, I believe these issues need to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nafisi. Tracy Del Rio is up next, followed by Lynn Schultz on deck.
Yes, thank you. My name is Tracy Del Rio, and I'm an Arroyo Grande resident. I have, or was, a Wasna Valley resident for a decade, and I recently sold. We recently sold our property this past year, and just for everyone's information, it's hard to sell a piece of property when you have to disclose an impending oil drilling application. And we had people literally become very uninterested in our property because of this project. And we were fortunate and lucky to sell our property, but it was a very difficult process, to say the least. And now I'm Arroyo Grande city resident, and I still have a strong affinity for Arroyo Grande and the Wasna region. And I just want to tell you that I have been involved with this project, or opposing this project, since 2008 when we first, had the first community meeting. And since then, it has morphed and evolved into a project that frankly has given a lot of lip service to the community about how they are willing to work with us. And I have to stress, so I encourage you to adopt the Planning Commission's, the Planning and Building Department's recommendation to shut this project down. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Del Rio. Lynn Schultz is up next, followed by Reed Hawkins.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Lynn Schultz, resident of Wasna Valley. Our household finds three outstanding issues regarding the proposed Acceleron project. One is current established land use. Acceleron has recently bought mineral rights in the Wasna area and wants to exploit them. Residents, on the other hand, have been there far longer, have livestock, family, and growing operations, and have established land use. We have heard about mineral rights owners. What about the rights of surface owners? Oil drilling is entirely at odds with the current established land use. It is not a clean business. It also can be sold from responsible operators to careless ones. Acceleron can promise anything, but who will own the operation next, and what control would the county have over anything that happens as a result? Meanwhile, I note that the project description in the CUP and EIR differs considerably from the descriptions given investors in the current applicant companies. Two, the need for oil in the United States. America needs oil for energy, but more importantly, America needs to reduce its need for oil. SLO County is already doing its part by permitting hundreds of megawatts of solar farms and having a nuclear power plant. The price of solar has dropped 80% in the past 10 years. Maybe we should forget the oil and put in solar. Three, the Acceleron-Mankins proposed project is not economically viable for SLO County. A study by the Minerals Management Service of the Department of Interior concluded in the late 1990s that oil production was only a break-even operation in our county over the past 50 years. PXP operations in Price Canyon have not indicated that the situation has changed during the past 15 years, even with new technologies. The final EIR admits that the jobs created by the proposed project would be few and temporary. Costs to the county for road repair and maintenance, fire protection, possible loss of potable water in the vicinity also cut into possible economic benefits to the county from oil production in Wasna or in similar areas in the county, as a permit for this project could well be encouraging other applications for such projects. Some residents have moved to the county and the Wasna area because of its unique living qualities. These residents are positive assets to our county, contributing to the economy of the area. Loss of property taxes and potential loss of business here offset the possible oil revenues. So in conclusion, let's continue to develop what has proven successful here: tourism, quality of life, sustainable energy projects, and agriculture, rather than a business, which is a negative for our economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Next up is Reed Hawkins, followed by Michael Law. Hi.
Yeah, I'm Reed Hawkins, a resident of Wasna Valley. I just would like two points here. First, as a property owner, I know that ownership of my property comes with a legal and moral obligation not to adversely affect my neighbor's property or the enjoyment of their property. The second point is that my wife and I have spent the last 35 years working, and like most middle-class people, our home is a result of these years of hard work and constitutes the bulk of our net worth. I'm trying to be brief here. I'm hurrying this. At almost 60 years old, I will very likely be significantly impacted financially. And all for what? I've always felt that blind acceptance of the not-in-my-backyard philosophy was a lousy one. If the NIMBY policy always reigned supreme, we would have no power plants, schools, highways, and so on. So I have believed that compromise for the greater good is often necessary. But in this case, it appears that all the sacrifices we residents of Wasna could wind up making, aesthetic and financial, will not be offset by any real constructive gain. The drop in property taxes and the reduced tax revenue to the county, by all reckoning, will not be offset by tax revenue from the project. It appears that only a handful of SLO County jobs will be generated. The quality and volume of oil generated by the project is not significant to the local economy, much less the national economy. I can only ask that if you decide to approve this project, that it is with the absolute certainty that the benefits outweigh the damage to the county, the valley, and its residents.
Thank you, sir. Next up is Michael Law, followed by Lindsay Gibson.
Hello, my name's Michael Law. I live on 5990 Wasna Road, about 5 miles off of from Lopez Drive. First, I'd like to also state that it's not only the red-legged frog that's endangered. There are several other species, a wide range, the bald-tailed eagle, shaded areas. We also, if you will notice, when you go just past the mushroom farm, from there on, you will notice that the oak trees don't have crown die-offs of the trees that are dying from pollution. If you take Lopez Drive Road, you can see the oak trees that have the crowns of those trees that are dying off the tops of them. But if you, as you go into Wasna Valley, you will not see that. That is the result of clean air. Also, I would like to state in my spot, every night I hear about 12 great horned owls, because next to me there's like this sheer cliff mountain edge that has all these hollow out spots, and that's where they nest. And they come over to my side to go to my meadow and look for gophers, field mice, rats, pack rats, and rabbits. That's a very unique thing. There's not too many places where you can say, I've heard 12 great horned owls in one little area. Furthermore, there is a wide range of butterflies that you do not also see around the area. And one of them, it's called the morphid butterfly, that only exists in the Lopez area. Nowhere else in the world, just in the Lopez area.
Mr. Law, could you kindly summarize?
Okay. I would just like to say that Wasna is a unique area. It has been for the longest time because basically it's been unknown. And that's why you have this large range of animals. If they start this road development for the oil drilling, there will be far more road kills of wildlife that is not used to the traffic. Owls, for one. You have to go around them or else they get ran over. Deer in 46, on Highway 46, when they first opened the road from Cambria to Paso Robles, there was a large kill of deer. And because they were used to their long-term migration routes. That will also happen in Wasno.
Thank you, Mr. Law. We need to make time for other speakers.
All right.
Lindsay Gibson is up next, followed by Susan Heaton.
My name is Lindsay Gibson, and I live on Deer Creek Road, which is just off of Wasna Town Site Road. I come to you today as one of, if not the youngest home and property owner in the Wasna area, and I need to tell you that this is a bad project. I'm the one that's going to have to clean up the mess here in 20 years when the project goes belly up and they leave everything behind, including the spilled oil and the wells that aren't properly capped, just like the last owner did. This is a marginal oil field where it's difficult to make money in. I understand there's new technology, but I don't feel that that new technology is going to have the merits that the applicant thinks it will. That means there is going to be trash left over when the applicant has no more money to clean it up. That's my concern. My concern stems from the fact that the economic stability of the applicant is so thin, in addition to the misinformation that we've received in the last 4 years. An example of this is today, Bruce Gibson was listed as a mineral rights owner and a supporter of the project. My father is Bruce Gibson, and he's sitting right back here. He adamantly opposes the project, and we are not mineral rights owners on any of our properties. This misinformation has scared me from the beginning and caused me to follow this project from the beginning. This is not a good project. You've already heard the reasons of noise, the 5 significant impacts that we're going to have. I'm not going to repeat all that. This is a bad project.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson. There are several Bruce Gibsons in the community. I'm not sure which one, but maybe the applicant could clear that up later and would have the opportunity to do so. Let's say Susan Heaton, and then on deck is Stan Sharp.
Good afternoon, Planning Commissioners. I'm Susan Heaton, and I live in Wasna Valley. I have been a tax-paying citizen of this county for 28 years, all of it spent in Wasna Valley. We moved to Wasna because we highly value the quality of life we have there. We can enjoy clean air, quiet surroundings, starry nights, and wildlife. We have chosen to live 30 minutes one way from town. That's a lot. We've given up convenience for the quality of life we have there. We have invested almost half of our adult life and almost all of our money, very high severity fire zone, unquote, and that's EIR section 4.7.1. Point 3 is extremely risky. The EIR is still vague in some of the plans it outlines in regards to fire. EIR section 4.7.1.2 states water sources near the project are minimal. Water would need to be trucked to the site. Thus, a mitigation to have a 360-gallon fire water tank has been considered but not finalized in the EIR, and that's stated in section 4.7-19. The EIR states that these tanks could, not will or shall, but could be accommodated on the shipping site. Language like that does not belong in a final EIR. Given CAL FIRE spacing requirements, those kinds of spacing requirements would maybe cause the 360,000-gallon tank to be placed elsewhere, which would also need to be researched before this time. Our life will be severely negatively impacted by this project, and I urge the Planning Commission to follow the recommendation of dedicated county staff who are recommending denial of the project.
Thank you, Ms. Eaton.
Thank you.
Next up, Stan Sharp, followed by Steve Ela.
Chairman Dan O'Grady, members of the board, my name is Stan Sharp. I reside in Wasna Valley. My home on my son's ranch, we have 200 acres there, is the nearest point that you've been discussing all day long. When you look at from where I live, if you look up 800 feet on the ground level, that's where pad one supposedly will go. If you look up to where the trucks come to our place and just around the valley, they are actually 150 feet from my back property, which is 100 feet from my home, meaning they make a turn and come this way. They go up to the pads. They'll be doing this all day long. They want to put the receiving dock up about 800 feet, or what he mentioned this morning, 1,100 and some feet, which will be lit all night long, and the noise level in Wasna Valley, I've been there now 12 years. I reside there now because I retired there because it was a beautiful place, and I worked as a businessman in Pasadena. So I don't want to stop progress, but this is not progress. This is a dangerous thing to a valley, and if it happens in Wasna, it will happen all over San Luis Obispo County. I can tell you that now, because that's why Acceleron has been contacting all these people in different areas to bring them down here to testify they're for it. And sure they are. They don't live there. It's money is what it's all about, and you may as well boil it down to that fact. I wish this morning that simply you and all the people could take a good look from where I live, listen to the night out people out there, and just for a little humor, I can take a turkey and put it up about 800 feet and let go gobble, 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 and you'll hear it all over the valley. Believe me, this noise level is bad. It's bad for the valley. It's bad for the people. One last statement. I took a look this morning. El Celeron has not continued what is going to happen to all the floods that come off when they take the water out, the oil out, whatever the waste goes. You know where it goes to? It's between mountain ranges. They made nothing to take it away anywhere else. Comes to my backyard in a ditch that I've made specially with rocks to take the flood off of the water only that comes down, and it comes down in a hurry. Every bit of the waste and all those wells are going to come in my backyard, go down into the fields, and empty into another drainage ditch, which goes along on two or three other homes and empties into the river out towards the bridge toward Porter Ranch. So if you can tell me in your own mind that this is a good project for the citizens of Wasna Valley and the citizens of San Luis Obispo and everybody else, then I would be for it. But believe me, I urge you vote no on this particular project, which will actually kill Wasna Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Next up, Steve Vila, followed by Thomas Gibbons. Just raise your hand, please, and that would do the job. Thank you.
I'm Steve Vila, a retired chemist from Paso Robles, not the Wasna Valley. I recommend today that you salute the excellent work of your staff and accept their verdict to deny Acceleron's application before you today. I submitted written comments to you Tuesday morning. They are in the record. In those comments, I discussed three topics: that the final EIR of this project is still flawed in its analysis of the dangers of hydrogen sulfide, perhaps because the EIR's preparer has experience with offshore drilling where the surface is flat and diffusion is unrestricted. Second, that recent analysis has shown that emissions of methane, 80% of natural gas, is a crucial component of climate disruption. Thus, should you permit even one well drilling to Acceleron, you need to have strict conditions of approval on the adventitious emissions of methane.
We need to pause for a medical emergency, please, Mr. Ila.
Into a ballot issue, this poll suggests that our citizens will also overwhelmingly choose a path of clean energy rather than one involving dirty fossil fuels. All right, thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ila. Next speaker, Thomas Gibbons, followed by Steve Weiner, I guess. Is Thomas Gibbons here? Okay, the next speaker, Steve Weiner. Oh, are you Mr. Gibbons?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
My name is Thomas Gibbons. I live at 3840 Fox and Canyon Road in Santa Maria, California. I've been sent here today at the request of the Board of Directors of the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District, of which I am a director. I'm also Vice President of the Board. We are an independent special district that does flood control and groundwater recharge for San Luis County and Santa Barbara County. So we're one of your independent special districts. We receive our funding from an ad valorem tax from southern San Luis County and northern Santa Barbara County. I run the watershed group, and we're in charge of a 1,600-square-mile watershed in the Cuyama, an 126-square-mile Wasna watershed, and a 84-square-mile Alamo watershed. All of those watersheds feed the water to Twitchell Dam. We operate Twitchell Dam. I want to disclose that my day-to-day job that actually pays me, so that I gave it up today to come down here, I'm a compliance officer for an oil field service company. And I'm new in the oil industry. I started in 1969, year before CEQA. I actually have done CEQA for quite a number of years. Our district has been in business since the late 30s. And we monitor the watershed that's important to all of us. We have been involved in every oil project in the watershed, all the way back up into Cuyama, but specifically in the Alamo and the Wasna. The very formation that most of the oil comes from in the northern Santa Barbara County and southern San Luis is the Monterey Formation. Along 166, that oil-bearing formation is right at the surface. By my house, over by Gary, on the downside of the Twitchell Dam, it's 9,000 feet deep. So a little bit of interesting fact there. We've never found pollution of oil nature in the Twitchell Reservoir. People throw things off the bridge, including bodies, but the water's pretty clean.
I guess that wasn't covered in the EIR.
I've spent a lot of years looking at EIRs, and we're somewhat concerned with this one because we're used to looking at CEQA standards versus the reported numeric value. We don't see any of that here. We're statistic people. We're data people. And San Luis County and Santa Barbara County use CEQA standards, and they're by design, they're numeric. I wish we had that so we could make some decisions. There's no data included in your EIR. Oil field production has gone on for 100 years and statistically hasn't seriously impacted any groundwater, sometimes surface water. So saying that, I see the red color is up there.
It is, but can you summarize?
I do have dichromatic vision, but thank you for using the correct color red for me. thank you for your time and listening to what I have to say.
Thank you for your information. Appreciate it. Okay, Mr. Steve Weiner and on deck, Owen Betts.
Owen Betts had to leave.
Okay. And on deck would be Ted Ehring.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Weiner. I'm the Executive Secretary-Treasurer of the Tri-Counties Building and Construction Trades Council. I represent 14 craft unions and have 34 affiliates representing over local labor. The members of the Building Trades Council will build this project safely and make sure that we protect the environment during the construction. We will also be doing the maintenance on it after it's built and make sure everything is done safely and for the environment. We're asking you to let this project move forward to lessen our dependency on foreign oil, to create jobs, to put people to work, and to increase the revenue for the county. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ted Ehring is next, followed by Betty Tolson.
Mr. Chairman and commissioners, I'm Ted Ehring. I reside in Pismo Beach. I'm a professional geologist registered in the state of California. I have a master's degree from the University of Southern California and a business degree from Claremont University. I'm a city council member for Pismo Beach. For that reason, I need to state that although it's normal for geologists to have interest in projects, especially wells, wildcat wells, I have no interest in this prospect, nor any interest in Acceleron whatsoever. I have on file with the city of Pismo Beach a required Form 700 showing my income for services rendered. My interest in this prospect is scientific, and its benefits to the community in providing jobs, benefit to the overall society from oil production, and support of mineral interests. I'm 55 years experience in the oil industry. 7 years of that experience was town lot drilling in downtown Los Angeles, West Los Angeles, Hillcrest Country Club, Rancho Golf Course, Avenue of the Stars, and Beverly Hills. These areas, as you may know, are where drilling rigs are silent, camouflaged, to blend with the surroundings, and I'm confident that Acceleron project will encompass these types of noise restrictions and oil restrictions. I've participated in several meetings with the numerous people throughout this county and helped to answer their questions. I can attest to the completeness of the EIR for this project, having served for 6 years on the Pismo's Planning Commission and 6 years as a council member. In addition to owning an interest in PIC Environmental Services, working in Los Angeles, San Bernardino, and Orange counties. Also, I can attest to the completeness of the high-quality science associated with this project due to my long history in the industry. I also might say that I'm a second-generation Californian, having paid taxes in this state for many, many, many years. I urge you to approve this project as submitted.
Thank you, Mr. Ehring. Next up, Betty Tolson, followed by Tom Murray.
My name is Betty Tolson. I am a 17-year resident of Wasna Valley. Some of the things I had planned to speak on have been covered, so I'll be brief. Acceleron's efforts to produce heavy crude in the valley have commanded our attention now for well over 4 years. The endless mitigations offered by Acceleron begs the question, what is the margin of error in these mitigations? For example, the groundwater safety has been assured because there are going to be monitored wells around. Well, if they find groundwater contamination in the monitored wells, it will be after the fact. So this is one example of some of the mitigations that, in my opinion, are flawed. I have no letters after my name other than a BA, but to me it's common sense. The county will be assuming a great risk, I think, if this project goes forward. The surrounding area residents are going to lose their pristine environment and the solid property values that are on the upswing are going to be diminished, and there could be a ripple effect going beyond the Wasna Valley in this project, and that will be, and I know this sounds far-fetched, but the tourist industry is of great importance here. The tourists come to see, to taste our what we have to offer in the way of wines and fruits and that sort of thing, and they come to enjoy our pristine coastline and surrounding areas. So the heavy crude production is totally out of step with this agenda. It's not exactly savor the central coast within that theme. And there's no guarantee the revenue from the oil is going to offset the loss of tax revenue from the...
One of the things that I've always kind of tried to bring forward is that this is always a balancing act. And, you know, the real charge that you folks have is being able to distinguish good projects from bad projects. And I've spoken on behalf of what I consider to be good projects, and I'm here to say that I think this is a bad project for a lot of reasons, which have already been enumerated, so I'm certainly not going to go into them. On the plus side, I just want to kind of reiterate how lush the wildlife is in the Wasna Valley. I've worked out there. I have friends out there. I've been there early in the morning and later in the evenings, And I've been in some really remote areas in the continental United States, and I really have to say I think this is one of the most well-endowed areas for wildlife that I've ever been. It's really extraordinary, and it's very sensitive. The project's applicants are really talking a lot about jobs and the economy. Well, let's take a look. Look around at the models where you see heavy reliance on petroleum extraction. Look no further than the west side of Kern County. There's a lot of small areas there whose communities have been decimated. Their employment rates are higher, the quality of life is lower, and oil has not been the panacea that it was promised. And that is true internationally. It's true throughout the United States. So, you know, really, I believe that that's chimera. And the other thing that's out there is we have an economic plan and an economic strategy in place, and this is not in conformance to that in the county. It is not something that's really on the radar screen of the Economic Vitality Commission and their work in terms of trying to bring the kinds of economies that we want for this community that will enhance our quality of life. So I really believe that there's an overemphasis on this. I believe it's not really it's not accurate. I think it's overstated. And I believe that the consequences to this community and to the overall quality of life that folks in this county enjoy is really, I mean, I believe that the fulcrum's over here, and this is much heavier here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Eric Greening is up next, followed by Bill Toma on deck.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I would like to thank the staff for their excellent analysis on this. I do support the staff recommendation. Since the conservation and open space elements approval, this is basically your first time acting on implementing policy E.7.1. And you are setting a huge precedent by how you implement it. And I think staff has got it exactly right. This is precedent setting. And I've been warning the supervisors since about August when it started appearing in Department of Energy publications, trade publications like Rig Zone. The Monterey Shale could be the next Bakken. In other words, this is the first of what could become an avalanche of applications depending how it's treated. The Monterey Shale is getting a lot of excitement in the industry, and it's a formation that this county shares with Santa Barbara, Monterey, and a bit of Kern. And so if you were to override the staff's recommendation on this, it would probably be a signal to the industry for an avalanche. You would have set a precedent of being very difficult to stop. So I think the precedent that the staff is giving you is the right one. You need to hold high standards. Policy E.7.1 needs to mean what it says it means. I'm also glad that staff is looking at the impact of fuel modification demanded by a project. In the past, this hasn't always been done. We're starting to see some of the difficulties that can lead to in places like Cambria, where it comes along later and is looked at later. And so I think they're getting that exactly right. They need to be congratulated and certainly their work accepted on this. I think also that the people bringing up the issue of road reconstruction and the vast acreage not accounted for in the EIR that would be used by the trucks coming in from the south on this very weird highway that is inundated part of the time, very strange kind of secondary access. I think that needs to be taken into account, and it only reinforces the staff's position. My final comment is that now that we also have a climate action plan in place and are committed to reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, the best place for oil is staying in the ground. That doesn't prohibit future generations from accessing it if they truly need it. But let's do what we can to stabilize the climate first. Every bit of oil that's taken out...
We had to ask to slow down once in a while, but it was not a major issue. Telling people that, I mean, we're talking about 2.5 acres here. the owls and the red-toed frogs and everybody aren't going to move out of the area because 2.5 acres are going to be disturbed. The visual impacts concerns, we're talking about oil wells that are, you know, no higher than my waist or maybe a little bit taller, I don't know, but less than 10 feet. The visual impacts, I think, can be dealt with. The landscape screening, the odor issue has been dealt with, and the EIR explained that very well. Again, I think the technical issues were discussed in the EIR. I think the staff report sounds very emotionally charged, and it's not based on fact. I think fact is what you will hopefully make your decision based on. The solar for schools. I mean, when are we going to have another opportunity like this to have renewables be financed by a project? There's no one's come forward with something like that for our local community. As I stated, I've got no dog in the fight, but I felt compelled to support a good project when I see one. And I guess if I had as much money as In-N-Out Burger, maybe I'd do an EIR on how many hamburgers little kids eat, and maybe an obesity EIR might be a good one for them to spend their money dealing with. Thank you very much.
We have our hands full with the one we have right now. I don't want any more right now.
Recommend approval of the project.
Thanks, Mr. Toma. Next up, Aaron Steed, followed by Ulf Ernens. I know I butchered this. I'm sorry. You can correct me when you get to the podium.
Hello, my name is Aaron Steed. I live in San Luis Obispo, and I've lived in San Luis Obispo County my entire life. I'm also a local business owner, and recently I was having dinner with some other local people, and they started talking about solar for schools and what could happen to this community if this project were to get passed and the details behind solar for schools. I became so passionate and so excited about the opportunity on the financial and positive environmental impact that this could have on our community. I sought out the right people within the organization that are trying to get this project passed, and luckily I was nominated to be its first board of directors. So I stand here proudly as a board director for Solar for Schools. And just to be specific as to what Solar for Schools is, it's a very simple concept. For every single barrel that is produced, $1 will be getting donated to this nonprofit called Solar for Schools. And up to $1,000 a day, 365 days a year, in perpetuity, as long as Acceleron is in business here in our community. The positive impact that could have on our community is absolutely staggering. That's cash that they're willing to put down that we can leverage to finance and get government subsidies for other green technologies and solar panels that are all going to be going on our community schools. This could eventually have a positive economic impact in energy savings and energy education for up to tens of millions of dollars in the future. In addition, stimulate the local economy by utilizing unionized local laborers to install and maintain this. We all talk about the importance of green technology in our community. We all talk about wanting to have more green technology, but who's willing to put up the money to do it? This company is willing to do it, and we have a huge opportunity to support this company who wants to have this positive effect. And immediately, Acceleron will be one of the most socially conscious businesses because of this initiative. I urge you to support the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steed. Is there an Ulf Ehrmans? Barbara Hawkins? And then on deck is, looks like Richard Waller.
Hello, my name is Barbara Hawkins, and I live at 6545 Wasna Townsite Road. My husband and I have lived in the Wasna Valley since 1983. We chose to live in this beautiful valley after searching for 2 years throughout all of San Luis Obispo County for property and then waiting another 6 months for a parcel to become available. Our valley continues to lure other people like myself and my husband. They are out there creating homes when there are few homes being built in our county. Tourists and county residents are biking out to our valley to appreciate its unique qualities. I invite you all to come to Wasna at night and sit in front of our house.
About 1906, he started farming on Wasna Road around 1906, and we've been farming the lands there ever since in various places, including in Wasna Valley. World War I, we grew beans for the war effort in Wasna Valley. County General Plan says, identify those areas of the county with productive farms, ranches, and soils, and establish goals, policies, and implementation measures that will enable their long-term stability and productivity. I don't think that includes oil. A number of obvious form letters written in support of the Acceleron project stated that the writer is a mineral rights owner and that the right to extract whatever minerals may lie underneath the surface should not be infringed as a denial of a conditional use permit. As a society, we make decisions for the common good, sometimes in opposition to individual rights. An example is zoning. I don't have the right to build a muffler shop on my private property I own in a residential area. Another example is emission controls in my automobile. I own my automobile. Why don't I have the right to remove all installed emissions controls? Society has determined that there are limitations to individual rights, including private property rights. We own a farm along Arroyo Grande Creek. We may not construct any building within 30 feet of the edge of the creek bank, even though there are many buildings previously existing within 30 feet of the edge of the creek bank that were built years ago. Adjoining property owners are now forbidden to build a residence within 200 feet of our property line. There are residences within 200 feet of our property line. Times change. We own a number of farms in both San Luis Obispo County and Santa Barbara County. We own the mineral rights to those farms, and we own mineral rights to land where we don't own the surface rights. Our family has made the decision not to allow mineral extraction. We'll use our land for its highest and best use, which is to grow food for people. All of our land will be placed eventually in conservation easements. I think that's something I encourage every landowner to do. My mother, who's 85 years old and doesn't get out much, is called frequently by, they seem to be hunters. They're looking for oil leases. And her comment is, you don't wreck farmland for oil. She won't allow any leases on her property. As well bring back whale harvesting for their oil as to place industrial oil extraction equipment with all of its attendant impacts into a nearly pristine valley.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Next up, Tim Cleath, followed by Mike Brown.
Tim Cleath, president of Cleath Harris Geologists here in San Luis Obispo, offices on Las Hosas Valley Road. Have been doing work as a certified hydrogeologist in developing, maintaining, protecting water for water supply in this county. We've worked in Wasna. We've worked throughout the county and throughout the Central Coast. We have been tasked by Acceleron to evaluate the geology and hydrology of the proposed project area. We have identified zones which we felt needed to be monitored within the property confines to see if there was anything that could happen if there were a leak from a pipe or an oil well. And so we have been continuing to study this. You can come to my office. I can show you the rocks that are from that area. I've been out there. We've walked the hills. We've picked up rocks. We've looked at springs. We've looked at the quality of the water. So I would ask, and I'm sorry that Dr. Curry isn't here, I would ask if he would think that that might not be a bad thing to do. So I do want to address a couple of issues here that have been raised, part on Dr. Curry's behalf by Mr. Skinner, and also with the lady who was talking about contamination. What we're dealing with here in the oil field is within a folded rock structure. And there are zones which are non-permeable, and then there's zones that have fracture permeability
within this interval of sedimentary beds. Not all of them have water. A lot of them may have water and gas. Some of them have tar stains on the fractures within those zones. Diatomites, siliceous shales, there's various types of rocks that are in this area, sandstones. And so it is the effort that we're making to try to identify those zones so that there will be no off-site contamination and to evaluate that as time goes on. I believe that the monitoring can be done in such a way that it will identify issues well before anybody could be impacted that would be on off-site areas. The WASD. Mike Brown, and probably our last speaker will be John Evans on deck.
Mike Brown, representing the CoLab. We don't take positions in support or against specific projects in most cases unless they have a broader impact. In this case, obviously, we're very concerned about the stability and use of mineral rights on the one hand, and I think from the standpoint of the commission and the staff in the future, the very elegant testimony provided to you today by the WASNA residents about the importance, charm, and greatness of rural living is very instructive when you get to some of the other things that you're going to be faced with, like the ag subdivision ordinance that's coming to you and some of the other policies that you have. It is a great preference. But we are very concerned. We think that fossil fuel, oil and gas, is going to be very important into the future. Yes, at some point technology may provide easier alternatives, but it isn't here yet on a scale that the society can survive. So we think that in terms of this application, you ought to focus on the specific application. How big is this in relation to the alleged problems? You know, that first one of the slides that staff put up goes right to the visual issue that is part of the reason for the denial. And you could hardly see the so-called pad and an oil well that would, or derrick or drill, which would be there for a short time. So I think you really have to look at the balance. And you do have to think, as Mr. Greening said, about the issue of the Monterey Shale and what's going to be the policy of this county whether or not this is precedential, and I really don't think it is. But here is this tremendous resource, this tremendous need. And then finally, what is our attitude toward industrialization? What is our responsibility as citizens to support and live with our share of industrialization? We certainly enjoy the benefits, but, you know, as the ad says, are we simply just going to import it from Detroit and let people live with that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. And our last speaker will be John Evans.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, John Evans. I'm a resident of the city of San Luis Obispo. I've actually lived here for about 35 years. Also work with Cannon, who's the civil engineering and mechanical engineering consultant for Acceleron on this project. And I've worked with Cannon now for about 26 years. During that time, I've had the opportunity to work with a number of oil companies throughout the Central Coast area. Worked on projects in Ventura County, Monterey County, San Luis Obispo County, and Santa Barbara County. And one of the things that I've also had the opportunity of seeing is how the coexistence of oil production facilities can operate from the standpoint of being good neighbors with not only residents, but wineries, row crops, and procedures and systems in place that allow that good neighbor policy to proceed. It was a couple years ago when I actually went out to the Mankins property for the first time. And let me just give you a little bit of my initial reaction as a civil engineer and as someone who's walked many oil fields over the last 20 years. Number one was that as a civil engineer, I thought, wow, this is pretty great that there are already access roads in place. That all we're really looking at having to do to make this a functioning field is to widen existing roads, not to have to figure out how we're going to carve new roads into the hilltop there. The other thing that really struck me is when it was explained to me that the truck route for the oil trucks was actually going to be on Porter Ranch Road, I thought, well, this is an amazing opportunity that you could actually route trucks away from a residential area onto a ranch where use the design principles that we have for projects and put them into practice. And I'm confident that if the county uses the design standards that apply for projects like this, we'll have a good project that where the owners and residents that have lived many years in Wasna, for the most part, will not even know and notice that there's an oil production facility happening at the very end of the township. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. We did very well today, all of us. We got through all but two speaker slips, and so my regrets to Craig Von Elton and David Baldwin. As the Bible says at our next hearing, the last shall be first. You shall be the first speakers at the next hearing, should you choose to attend. The Commission wants to thank all of you who spoke today for the valuable information that you presented. Commissioners took voluminous notes, which I assure you we will be reviewing and considering during our evaluation of the project. And I especially appreciate the high level of decorum that you have shown today. I think it's especially notable on a project that engenders such passion. Passionate feelings both for or against, and I really think that speaks highly of you as well as our community. Well, what happens next? The hearing will be continued, and I understand from staff that our next meeting on March 8th is available for continuing this hearing. Is that correct, Ms. Carroll?
That's correct.
Okay, so right now it will be the first item and so far the only item on the agenda. And so the hearing will begin at 9, and there will be a commission motion here momentarily on that. And then, of course, the applicant will have the opportunity after all the public comment is concluded to respond to all of the comments. So... Okay, perhaps you could help here, Ms. McDonald. I'd like to call for a motion to continue this hearing until March 8th. Is that an appropriate thing to do at this time?
That's correct.
All right.
So moved.
Second, please.
I'll second it.
Call the roll.
Mr. Irving?
Aye.
Mr. Murphy?
Aye.
Ms. Christensen?
Aye.
Mr. Topping?
Aye, Hemming.
Yes.
And Chairperson O'Grady?
Aye. So motion passes. There will be a continuation. This hearing will be continued until 9 a.m. on March 8th. I'd like a motion to take all testimony. Please, one moment, please, until we adjourn the hearing. Thank you. To take all testimony and documents into the record.
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? No. I'd also now like a motion to finally adjourn the meeting for today until the next regular meeting on March 8th.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, and have a good day. Or good evening.